Programs. This is the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. President Bush claims troops are making progress in Iraq now, roughly 3 months since he declared an end to major fighting there.
Since the end of the major combat operations in Iraq, the nation has been liberated from tyranny and is on the path to self-government and peace.
In a news conference earlier at the White House, Mr. Bush said conditions in most areas of Iraq are stable and peaceful. He did admit, though, pockets of dangerous resistance remain without broaching the subject, really, of the near daily deaths of American soldiers there. The president said a stable Iraq is critical to the stability of the Middle East, and Mideast stability is critical to our nation's security, in his words. The president went on to say the search for weapons of mass destruction will continue, and he's confident they will eventually be found. Meanwhile, across the Atlantic, British Prime Minister Tony Blair is shrugging off calls to say specifically if he will in fact resign if no weapons of mass destruction are found in Iraq. Responding to questions at a news briefing earlier, Blair said he believes intelligence gathered before the war there was accurate.
As I've said constantly to you, I believe the intelligence we received is correct. So that is my view. It's been my view all the way through. And I think in relation to finding the actual evidence, well, let's let the Iraq survey group do their work.
Blair reiterated he does not want troops to stay in Iraq any longer than necessary. He only wants to see Iraq get back on its feet politically and economically. Saudi Arabia's foreign minister says the U.S. can now interview a Saudi citizen who apparently knew two of the September 11th hijackers while living in San Diego. During an interview on ABC's Good Morning America, Prince Saud al-Faisal said U.S. and British officials had already questioned Omar al-Bayoumi, who had been released after no evidence was found linking him to the terrorist plot. The prince said National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice told him yesterday the U.S. wants to talk to him again. However, he dismissed suggestions he be questioned without Saudi officials present.
Hey, watch it!
Down in front. Hey, we made it.
Yeah.
4 hours of back-to-back Godzilla movies.
Wait.
Sorry. Did you see that cute girl on the end as we came in?
Oh, who could miss her?
So ask her out.
What?
Yeah. Excuse me. My friend here wants to know if the girl on the aisle will go out with her. Pass it down.
Ask the girl over there if she wants to meet this loner. Pass it down.
Hey, that dude over there wants to meet the girl next to you when the flick's over.
Excuse me, miss. There's a guy down there who wants to know if you're an organ and tissue donor.
Yes, of course.
Are you an organ and tissue donor? It's a simple but important question. Talk to your family today. Make sure they know your decision so there'll be no question later.
Hey, buddy. She said yeah. Oh, hey, buddy. Me too.
What?
Share your life. Share your decision. Call 1-800-355-SHARE for a free brochure. 1-800-355-SHARE. A message from the Advertising Council and the Coalition on Donation.
The United States could very well soon find itself in the midst of talks with North Korea. Secretary of State Colin Powell today says there is a, quote, distinct possibility. China, North Korea, the United States, as well as perhaps a number of several other nations, may take part in another round of multilateral talks later this year. The topic, of course, will be Pyongyang's nuclear ambitions. The last time the United States, China, and North Korea all met was back in April. Since that Beijing conference, Washington has been pushing for more talks that would include both South Korea and Japan.
One of the reasons people give for not buying LoJack is where they live. But that has little to do with whether your car will be stolen. It's where you drive. Do you drive to work? To a mall? To the city? That's why you need LoJack. Nationally, stolen vehicles that have LoJack are recovered over 90% of the time. And LoJack guarantees they'll recover your vehicle within 24 hours after you report it stolen to the police, or LoJack will reimburse you the cost of your LoJack system. See your car dealer or LoJack.com.
Anti-globalization protests continue today in Montreal, Canada, where trade ministers from some of the World Trade Organization member nations are discussing how to reduce trade barriers around the globe. Alistair Wanklin tells us the protesters haven't been very successful in disrupting the talks.
The protests continue, but so does the meeting between trade ministers. Spokeswoman for the protesters, Tamara Herman, said Canadian police had crippled the demonstrations.
The sheer numbers that were arrested yesterday, that has a big impact on us. We also, our resources are a bit more drained.
Some of those arrested were said by police to have been carrying makeshift petrol bombs. The Canadian government said violence discredits protests. Meanwhile, as this informal round of talks draws to a close, anti-globalization protesters say they'll regroup at the coming full WTO meeting in Mexico. Alistair Wangton reporting.
And a two-year-old Las Vegas girl who was left in a hot car earlier this week has died. A local television saying she died earlier this morning. I'm Corey Morris. This is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Lagos with today's Car Clinic Minute. Wow, what a brain! No, I'm not talking about the class valedictorian or the scarecrow after he reached Oz. This brain's inside your car. When I come back, I'll tell you all about it. We've all seen the tornado device on TV and wondered if it really worked. I was also skeptical at first, until we tested 6 tornado units, and in every case, we got more miles per gallon and felt more power. Gasoline's expensive, so when we find something that saves us money, it just makes sense to get it. Call 800-500-8880 and order your tornado unit today, or visit tornadoair.com. Einstein's got nothing on your car's ECM, or electronic control module. Like human brains, ECMs gather data from the environment and make adjustments to optimize performance. For example, this onboard computer adapts fuel delivery, seat positions, cabin temperature, braking, and emissions. It also alerts you to potential problems and notifies you for service. Like all brains, your ECM is sensitive to environmental abuse. So follow the scarecrow's lead. Take your ECM for scheduled service to the Oz, service center of your choice. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of an earlier program, so don't call today, and thanks for listening.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Speaking to you on the IT America Radio Network on terrestrial radio stations from the West Coast to the East, broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius radio satellite covering North and Central America from Alaska to the equator, and streaming audio on the Internet with listeners all across the world. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Has the food industry's corruption of politics put Americans at risk? It's really extraordinary what's going on with this. A couple of days ago, we saw this thing from workingforchange.com where the corporate lobbyists continue to have their way with the Illinois state legislature, it may become as difficult to find out the skinny on factory farming as it's been to ferret out the truth of the Jenin refugee camp invasion or discover how many innocent civilians were killed in Afghanistan. The Illinois House took one step toward that goal by passing House Bill 5793 by an 118-0 vote. Legislators passed a bill making it illegal to photograph animals on factory farms without the consent of their owners. And then we go back to the Bush school lunch proposal back in April 5th. This was the year before last. President Bush's proposal to reject a Clinton administration requirement that all beef served to children in the school lunch program be tested for salmonella. Numerous companies and industry groups that were benefit from the proposal not only contributed heavily to Bush's presidential campaign, but their executives assumed key roles on the president's transition team. And now we have the sugar industry threatening the World Health Organization, and on it goes. It's getting wild out there, folks, with the cons, the conservatives, and their association with these large food producers, and what they're doing, not just with our food supply, but with our information supply and with our government, our governance, our mechanism of governance. Has the food industry corruption of politics put Americans at risk? Marion Nessel, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, she'll correct me, author of Food Politics, has been professor and chair of the Department of Nutrition and Food Studies at New York University since 1988. She taught nutrition at Brandeis University and from 1976 to 1986 was associate dean at the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine. She served as managing editor of the 1988 Surgeon General's Report on Nutrition and Health. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, Dr. Nessel.
It's a pleasure to be here. I wish you could turn up the volume a little bit. This feels like a hearing test.
Oh, my. Okay. Well, hopefully our board operator there heard the message and can do something about that. Is it Nessel or Nestle?
It's Nessel. You got it
Nessel,
right.
Great. Okay, great. And you've written a book called Food Politics, How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health. What prompted you to write this book?
Well, exactly the kinds of things that you were just talking about. No one in my field was talking about them, and I think of it as the elephant under the carpet. There was this huge monster in the room, and nobody was talking about it. Everyone was talking about the astonishing increase in levels of overweight and obesity in this country, as if this were strictly a matter of personal responsibility and had nothing to do with the situation or the environment that we find ourselves in. And when I was in government, working for the government, I was just astonished by the amount of clout that these food corporations had when they were so anxious to make sure that no federal agency or no nutritionist, for that matter, ever suggested anything about eating less of their products, regardless of what the product was.
Can you give us an example of that?
Well, I guess the best example is the most recent one, the one you just mentioned, where the sugar lobbying groups are asking the United States government to withdraw funding from the World Health Organization, the organization that has done such a splendid job of stopping the SARS epidemic, because they published a report on dietary guidelines a couple of months ago that suggested that people not eat more than 10% of their calories from added sugars. 10% of calories from sugars is about 2 ounces of sugar a day.
That's a pretty substantial amount of sugar.
Spartan rations, and yeah. The sugar lobbies were so upset about this that they've lobbied governments, gotten the ambassadors of dozens of countries to complain to the World Health Organization, and then asked the United States government to intervene and withdraw funding. That's quite astonishing. What's changed? I mean, the lobbies have always been involved in this. What's changed recently is the explicitness and the overtness of what they're doing. All of this used to be hidden. When I started writing Food Politics 4 years ago, it was really difficult for me to get this kind of information because it was buried, it was hidden, it was behind closed doors. Now it's out in the open.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the whole. It's amazing how, particularly with this administration, for the first time in my recollection, and I've been on this planet more than 50 years, and I've been paying attention to politics for much of that, and this is the first time I've seen an administration that just brazenly says, we are catering to a special interest, to those special interest groups that give us money, period.
And we don't care what happens to the public.
Right.
We don't care what happens to public health. We don't care how many fat kids there are. We don't care if the industry is marketing to children. We don't care if the industry is lobbying. We don't care if every single food safety measure that would protect the public gets defeated by some lobbying group. It's amazing.
Yeah. It is remarkable. Now in our chat room, some folks are talking about this issue. And by the way, if any of our listeners want to get to that, just go to tomhartman.com, click through to the radio show page, and then click the chat button. And when you get to the trade forum, click on the chat button. And one of the comments was made: these people don't care about our children. They don't care, you know. I've worked with people in a variety of industries that are not what you would call the best industries. I don't know how to say it beyond that. And from back years ago, I used to run an advertising agency. And there were some accounts that we wouldn't take, but nonetheless, there are a lot of companies out there that are just in it for the money, and everybody's upfront about it. But I don't think I've ever met anybody in business who, and maybe it's just, maybe I'm naive, but I don't think that I've ever met anybody who at night can look themselves in the mirror before they go to sleep and say that during the day they did things to harm people. There's always some rationalization of there's a greater good or there's some positive purpose or the other side is misguided. What is the story that these people on
well, I actually
are
see a lot
telling
of
themselves?
Pointing. I mean, what I'm seeing is finger pointing. It's not our fault. We're just giving the public what the public wants, and this is a matter of personal responsibility anyway. If you people just had character and just said no, there wouldn't be a problem. We're just doing what the public wants.
And what about that argument?
Well, it's a complicated argument because one of the great things about being an adult is you get to eat whatever you want. You know, nobody can tell you to finish your peas before
you
leave
go.
The table. And so there's some merit in that, but it's as if the people are making personal choices in a vacuum. They're not making personal choices in a vacuum. We are influenced by $33 billion a year in advertising for food and beverages alone, and that advertising is targeted to us in ways that we just don't notice. We're not supposed to notice it. To the extent that the advertising is successful, it slips in below our consciousness and appeals to our belief that we make decisions that are completely independent of outside influences. I mean, it's really quite skillfully done. And once you start noticing it, you begin to see the ways in which it's done. So the personal, and it isn't just the advertising. The things that are really encouraging people to eat more now are more subtle than that. It's convenience. It's having food available within arm's reach at all times. It's ubiquity, having food available everywhere. Look at where food is sold now. In New York, you can buy food in shoe stores, in bookstores, in clothing stores. Any place you go, food is available. That's a eat more message, and it encourages people to eat more. Larger portions encourage people to eat more, and cheap food encourages people to eat more.
And is all you can eat buffets that are proliferating?
Exactly. All of those kinds of things. Yeah. And all of those are influenced by government policy. One of the things that the personal responsibility people argue is that they don't want government involved in personal choice. But of course the government is already involved up to its ears in the kinds of food supply that we have and the way in which our food supply is purchased, traded, and supported and priced. All of those things are affected by government policies. And, you know, from a nutritionist standpoint, I'd like to see some of those policies tweaked. We don't even have in order to encourage people to eat more healthfully.
Yeah, the folks on the other side, though, I think would say, well, let's get government out altogether, that the government involvement is creating these kind of dislocations. And
no, I don't think that's what they would say. They would say keep government involved the way it is now because that protects us. Don't make any changes in what government is doing. I think it's a complete fallacy to think that the government is not involved in food choice now. It is.
Right.
It's involved in farm supports, which lower the price of foods that have cheap sweeteners and cheap fats in them.
Particularly corn.
You know, corn sweeteners and the oils that come from soybeans, for example. It's involved in pricing sugar so that it encourages keeping the price of sugar high, that's sucrose high, so that the companies will use corn sweeteners instead. It's involved in business rules that allow companies to deduct the cost of advertising from as a business expense, even when that advertising is directed towards small children.
Yeah.
It allows advertising on television during children's television hours, and it allows marketing in schools.
Yes, we're speaking with Marion Nessel, who is the author of Food Politics, a book about the subtitle, in fact, is How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health. Marion, is there a website that people can go to find out more information?
Yes, it's www.foodpolitics.com.
Foodpolitics.com.
And what I put on that is information, is kind of reviews and commentary about the books. I have the letter from the Sugar Association threatening to sue me. I put all of that kind of thing on there.
That's great. I'd like to get into this a little further with you if you have the time.
Sure.
You mentioned an experience that you had with the meat industry. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I'm not sure which experience you're referring to exactly, but when I was working on the Surgeon General's report on nutrition and health, I was asked to speak to a group of the heads of meat lobbying firms or meat trade associations and to tell them about the Surgeon General's report on nutrition and health. And I had been told on the first day on my job, work doing that report, that no matter what happened, the report would never say eat less meat, because that would be politically impossible to do. Instead,
right. Marianne, may I interrupt you, please? Can you hold that thought? We've got a commercial break here, but
sure.
I want to finish this story. It's a great one. This is Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
Mom, what's wrong?
My knees are killing me. I shouldn't have jogged this morning.
Today's my party. You gonna be okay?
I should be. The party's hours away.
And we have tons to do.
The moment of choice, Tylenol or Advil. Which works better to get you through the day? Truth is, Advil can give you longer-lasting relief, better relief than Tylenol for tough muscle aches and pain. And Advil is gentle on your stomach.
Mom, you look like you're having fun.
I really am.
For better relief, advance to Advil.
Attention all plaintiffs. Personal injury, negligence, premises liability, medical malpractice, product liability, commercial cases. Receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Call now, 800-586-5493. Get cash now on your pending lawsuit. No risk, no payments. We only collect when your case is settled. Call 800-586-5493. Express Lawsuit Funding can help you. 800-586-5493.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of Progressive Talk Radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really? Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kick it off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, IE America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
We are the world. We are the children.
Welcome back to the program. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Marion Nessel, the author of Food Politics, How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health. And Marion, you were telling us the story about the working on the Surgeon General's report and getting up to the point where you were going to be commenting on how much meat people should be eating.
Yeah, this is now ancient history because this took place in 1986. But when I started working on the Surgeon General's report, I was told the first day on the job that it could never say eat less meat, because if it did, the Department of Agriculture would object and lobbyists would be involved and Congress would make sure that the report never came out. This was, after all, during the Reagan administration.
But what about the truth?
And that, well, it has nothing to do with the truth. We instead we would use euphemisms that everyone would understand as a code for eat less meat, like choose lean meats, which is kind of an oxymoron. And so, you know, that was kind of my introduction to that job. And during the, I thought, well, maybe they're just being paranoid. But during the period that I worked on the report, it was clear that they were anything but paranoid. Every single lobbyist representing any food or food product or commodity that might be affected by the report came in and met with staff in the office that I was working in. I wasn't directly involved in most of those meetings, but I knew that they were taking place. And so we were very, very careful about the wording of recommendations. And at one point, I actually met with the directors of several of these trade associations, and it was an extremely tense and uncomfortable meeting until I finally told them, okay, folks, this report is not going to say eat less meat. And then everybody relaxed. They were perfectly happy to have the report say eat less fat. As long as meat wasn't singled out.
Right, because there's not
and
a big
so
fat
industry. See that. We see that with meat. We see that with dairy products. We see it with salt and sugar. In fact, any food product that is a source of the kinds of things that you really ought to be eating less of if you're worried about your weight or health has a lobbyist in Washington to make sure that no federal agency ever says anything about that. And if you look on the website of federal agencies today, you know, obesity and overweight are the single most important public health nutrition problem that we're facing in this country today, and it's a problem of staggering proportions because it raises the risk for so many different diseases. And yet, and there are two sides to the obesity equation. There's an activity side and a food side, but you can't lose weight very easily unless you eat less. And if you go on the website of any government agency involved in advising the public about obesity, you won't see anything about eating less. There's quite a bit about moving more. And mind you, I'm in favor of people being more active. But I think that we really have to watch what we're eating if we're going to lose weight.
Right. What do you think is the solution to... I mean, clearly there are health solutions to the health issues that you're bringing up, but in the minute and a half or so that we have left in this segment, I'm wondering, what do you think is the solution to this problem of government being subservient to industry?
Well, there are a number of solutions. One is education. One is taking political action. One is taking legal action, and one is trying to get legislation. I mean, what we're talking about here is democracy. And we're talking about democracy in action. If people want to change the system, they have to use the political system for their own purposes, for the benefit
happen?
Of the public and not just the benefit of corporations.
Do you see any advocates out there for this?
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of advocates. Certainly Center for Science and the Public Interest in Washington, D.C.
No, I mean elected officials.
Oh, elected officials. There are a group of officials in Washington who are working on these issues now, and certainly in state legislatures. There are states all over the country that are examining marketing practices in schools.
Great. Thank you.
Everybody should do it locally.
I agree. Marion Nessel, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
I appreciate your joining us. Food Politics, How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health. Foodpolitics.com is the website. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Hamilton.
And I'm Laura Miller. It's not a layoff, but 2,700 workers at an IBM chip manufacturing plant in South Burlington, Vermont, are taking an 18% wage cut as the company reduces everyone's working hours. IBM came under fire last week when audio tapes surfaced of its human resources executives discussing the need for a mass transfer of jobs overseas, but the company says this cutback in Vermont is no precursor to any sort of move. Effective August 2nd, workers at the plant will go from working 42 hours to 36 hours per week.
The public has spoken on the issue of whether the Labor Department should eliminate the right to time and a half pay for millions of American workers, and the answer is clear. A vast majority oppose the rollback. The public comment period on the proposal officially ended June 30th, but cards and letters keep pouring in, more than 80,000 so far. The Economic Policy Institute says the plan would rob a net 8 million Americans of overtime wages.
If these regulations go through, we will lose our time and a half overtime, and we stand to lose thousands of dollars in overtime pay.
John Garrity is an electronics technician with the federal government.
These changes are changes that are going to benefit corporate America. There are no benefits to the American working man or woman that goes to work every day.
Earlier this month, a House measure that would have blocked any changes to overtime rules failed by 3 votes after a handful of Democrats crossed party lines to support the president. 7 other Democrats failed to show for the vote, including presidential hopeful Richard Gephardt. Ironically, Gephardt was in Iowa that day receiving the endorsement of the International Association of Machinists.
The 6-year contract between Caterpillar and the United Auto Workers expires in April.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Hello, this is Andy Dave Rush inviting you to join the fun on Home Improvement USA. Great guests and experts offer home improvement advice and keep us updated on new products and technologies. On Home Improvement USA, we give away terrific prizes to all our callers. Join me, Handy Dave, along with Ken Walchek on location at Clark Devon Hardware in Chicago and engineer and handyman Jay Brentlinger for Home Improvement USA. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 Pacific on Saturday. Don't miss it, Home Improvement USA.
We broadcast it on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on IE America Radio Network.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tell it all, brother, before we fall. Tell it all, brothers and sisters. Tell it all.
How much you're holding back on me.
Welcome to the vast, radical, middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. You know, I say that because the words right and left have been so corrupted. Just so terribly, terribly corrupted. And, for example, I got an email here from Joel in Sherman, Texas. JD in Sherman, Texas. He says, oh, and by the way, if you'd like to be on the program today, the number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 825-5937. And our quote for the day is about corporations from Civis Mundi. Corporations are charters granted by our government to profit under, not to rule from.
So anyhow, J.D. in Sherman, Texas writes, as for definitions of the words liberal and conservative, I generally subscribe to the classical definitions of the ones found in Webster's, but I am disturbed as to how these words are misused. I am a factory worker, and many of my coworkers believe liberal is a bad word. Weak on defense, pro-welfare, pro-affirmative action, pro-women's lib, pro-gay rights, pro-abortion, pro-big government, etc. Not sure that all those things are necessarily bad, but anyhow. So some go so far as to associate liberalism with socialism or communism. On the other hand, they say conservative is good. Patriotic, macho, independent, high morals, strong on defense, family values. They do not see conservatives as anti-labor or for big corporations. And says, I like the classical definitions found in Webster's. So into the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. Conservatism, the principles and policies of a conservative party, a disposition in politics to preserve what is established. Political philosophy based on tradition and social stability, stressing established institutions and preferring gradual development to abrupt change. The tendency to prefer an existing or traditional situation to change. So I don't see how you could say that a president who goes charging off to war against another nation or who creates the biggest budget deficit in the history of the United States is a conservative. Those seem very aggressive, non-conservative actions. And those, among others, you know, slashing clean air legislation and calling it the Clear Skies Initiative, and slashing protections in our food supply for our children and calling that food safety. These are not things that are conservative, in my opinion. Now, liberal, what does liberal mean? You look in the dictionary. Liberal, favoring or based upon the principles of liberalism or constituting a political party advocating or associated with the principles of political liberalism, especially of a political party. Greater individual participation in government and constitutional, political, and administrative reforms designed to secure these objectives. Then, of course, there are other meanings for the word liberal, you know, stresses warm-hearted readiness to give in size and things like that. But bottom line, according to the dictionary, liberal means get individuals involved in government, and conservative means don't change things. Or don't do it too quickly. So, you know, but that's not what these words have come to mean. So I prefer to say I think that the vast majority of Americans know where they're at, know what they believe in, know what they want, and aren't really comfortable with all these labels. I suppose you could say that I'm a liberal, but I'm going to call it the radical middle, because I really believe that the place that I'm coming from here is the place that the majority of Americans are, which is that we want democracy. We want a government of, by, and for we the people, not they the transnational corporations. This is the fundamental issue that we are facing right now. We have an administration that is of, by, and for large multinational corporations. It's all made up of CEOs. The least wealthy multimillionaire in the Bush cabinet is Condoleezza Rice, and she has an oil tanker named after her. She's a millionaire also, of course, but the least of the millionaires. And this is what has happened to statespeople, or statesmen they used to call them, to people who really and truly care about what they're doing in the context of for the nation rather than simply for the group that's going to give them the next big political contribution. But we were talking about this food stuff here with Marion Nestle, and I'd like to just wrap up some of the stats on that before we move along. President Bush's proposal to reject a Clinton administration requirement that all beef served to children in the school lunch program be tested for salmonella and instead be irradiated is the latest in a series of moves intended to weaken consumer protection laws for the benefit of his corporate supporters, according to Public Citizen. Our question, has the food industry's corruption of politics put Americans at risk? Numerous companies and industry groups, goes on this the report, that would benefit from the proposal not only contributed heavily to Bush's presidential campaign, but their executives assumed key roles in the president's transition team. Public Citizen President Joan Claybrook says, this proposal is nothing more than a payback to corporations that contributed to President Bush's campaign, which was the most expensive campaign in history. The president has no shame. On Wednesday, the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced a proposal This is from a year ago, to abandon the Clinton administration policy to conduct bacterial testing of meat served as part of the USDA's National School Lunch Program. The Food Marketing Institute gave $739,567 to the Republican Party last year. And the Food Marketing Institute's president and CEO, Timothy Hammond, served on Bush's Agriculture Transition Advisory Team, personally donated the maximum to the president's campaign. Hammond was also a member of the Bush Pioneers, people responsible for raising more than $100,000 for his campaign. Hammonds and FMI actively opposed certain measures to test meat-free E. coli. The Grocery Manufacturers of America gave $242,925 to the Republican Party and GOP candidates last year. GMA President Manley Mobus served on Bush's Agricultural Advisory Transition Team and personally donated the maximum allowable to Bush's presidential campaign. And on it goes. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association gave $389,170 to the Republican Party and GOP candidates last year. NCBA Vice President Chandler Keyes served on Bush's Agricultural Advisory Team. It goes, and you say, well, they're giving money to the Democrats, too, aren't they? Well, for example, the IBP, the Iowa Beef Packers, gave $126,000 to politicians, $121,000 of it to Republicans, $4,000 to Democrats. The Food Marketing Institute, the first group I mentioned, gave $795,000 to politicians. This was in the 2000 election. $739,576 went to Republicans and only $55,000 to Democrats. So it is quite lopsided. The cattle feeding and ranching industry, $25,250 to Republicans, zero to Democrats. If you'd like to be on the program today, 1-800-TALK-YES is the number, 1-800-825-5937. And Ben in Elgin, Illinois, as a comment for us. Welcome to the program, Ben.
Thank you. I'm also the webmaster of WhiteRoseSociety.org.
Oh, yeah. Great. That is a marvelous site.
And after today, that people will find your program on that site.
Well, thank you, Ben. Thanks
You're
for
quite
that update.
Welcome.
I've had a lot of, actually, emails and requests for archives of the show, so this will be great.
Now, there's a real problem with political labels that I've got, and that is, you know, I'm a politically aware person. I think I've been politically aware since about 1970 when I was in the sixth grade and I started, you know, researching nuclear disarmament and tried to convince my folks to build a fallout shelter in the basement. And I had a hard time applying a political label to myself anymore. You know, am I a conservative? Well, yes, in some things I guess I really am a conservative. I don't want to see the Constitution of the United States changed.
Right, me too. I don't want to see the government just spending in deficit. I think that, you know, we're spending as much on interest as we're spending more on interest on our national debt than we are on all of our social programs combined.
Correct. And
that's, you know, that's nuts. That's what Barry Goldwater warned us about.
Exactly right. And I don't want to see our Constitution changed. I don't want to see things done that promote irresponsibility among people. Okay, I don't want to see government programs that do help people structured in such a way as to be the enabler in a dysfunctional
right.
relationship.
Fostering dependency.
Correct. But I do think the government needs to both help people and use its good offices to foster help towards people.
I agree.
So, but in terms of liberty, you know, liberty issues, 100% of the time, I find myself agreeing with the Libertarian Party.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of issues of, should people be helped? Should people, by government? Is it necessary to have government programs to help some categories of people who cannot help themselves? Yeah, definitely.
Well, the Libertarians would say no.
That's right. So in that case, I wind up moving over into the Democratic side of things, and in fact sometimes to the radical Democratic side of things, because I think that health care is one of those things that is not optional.
Yeah, I agree. And in fact, in our next hour, we're going to have a guest from the head of the Ayn Rand Institute, which is the philosophical foundation of the libertarian
group. I was an objectivist many years ago before I thought things through a little better.
Well, we're going to have the head objectivist for the planet on in the next hour. We're going to be talking about should corporations be considered persons under the law. So that should be an interesting conversation. But Ben, I am so with you on this that it is so hard, for most people, frankly, and that's why I came up with this radical middle thing, to say, yeah, I'm a liberal or yeah, I'm a conservative, because on the one hand, there aren't nice, neat little boundaries. And on the other hand, the particularly, you know, the Fox News crowd have turned the word liberal into something that even liberals would not agree with. And
yeah,
it's become a swear word.
My voting choices are sort of strange. When I see a race in which the outcome is all but decided, I will vote libertarian.
Yeah.
If I see a race in which I think I can make a difference, 99% of the time, I will vote Democratic.
Yeah.
And that 0.1% of the time is when I see a Republican public servant who isn't both a thug and a fascist.
Yeah. Here in Vermont, the libertarians are pretty non-existent, but we've got the Progressive Party.
Right.
And, you know, there's the Green Party around. So a lot of good stuff. Good food for thought, Ben. Thank you for calling in and sharing that. I appreciate you being on the program. The sugar industry. Let's just to wrap up this stuff. I did want to share this information with you. This is mind-boggling. And Ben, thanks for calling 1-800-TALK. Yes, the sugar industry in the United States. This from the Guardian in the United Kingdom. So they're looking at what's going on here and reporting on the stuff that we're just not finding much about. Marion Nestle mentioned this. The sugar industry in the U.S. is threatening to bring the World Health Organization to its knees by demanding that Congress end its funding unless the WHO scraps guidelines on healthy eating due to be published on Wednesday. It'll be interesting to see what happens when these things come out tomorrow. The threat is being described by WHO insiders as tantamount to blackmail and worse than any pressure exerted by the tobacco lobby. This from the article, Sugar Industry Threatens to Scupper WHO by Sarah Bosley in the April 21st Guardian UK. Oh, April. Oh, this is some time back. I'm going to have to do a little more research on this and find out what the status of this is right now. The industry is furious at the guidelines, they say, which say that sugar should account for no more than 10% of a healthy diet. And the association, together with six big food industry groups, has also written to the U.S. Health Secretary Tommy Thompson, asking him to use his influence to get the WHO report withdrawn. This coalition, this consumer interest group, includes the U.S. Council for International Business, comprising more than 300 companies, including Coca-Cola and PepsiCo. Professor Philip James, the British chairman of the International Obesity Task Force, who wrote the WHO's previous report on diet and nutrition in 1990, says these strong-arm tactics are nothing new. As The Guardian says, the day after his expert committee had decided on a 10% limit, the World Sugar Organization, quote, went into overdrive, he said. Quote, 40 ambassadors wrote to the WHO insisting our report should be removed on the grounds that it would do irreparable damage to countries in the developing world. The developing world, the fact that sugar should be not more than 10% of your diet is going to harm people. Professor James was called in by the American Embassy in Geneva to, quote, explain to them why they were suddenly getting an enormous amount of pressure from the State Department to have our report retracted, end quote. The sugar industry, he discovered, had hired one of Washington's top lobbying companies. Since his 1990 report, the International Life Sciences Institute, now doesn't that sound nice? International Life Sciences Institute, good, credible organization that really cares about your nutrition, you would think, founded by Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, General Foods, Kraft, and Procter & Gamble, has also gained accreditation to the WHO and the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization. It's like they're a country. The Washington-based National Soft Drink Association suggests that 25% of our dietary calories should be coming from sugar. Some interesting facts here on the fast food industry. In a survey of 9- and 10-year-olds, this from Nader's group, half of them said they thought that Ronald McDonald knew best what kids should eat. Every month, 90% of the children between 3 and 9 in America visit McDonald's. Now, you know, on the one hand, I say, hey, you know, a business is successful. Good on them. They should, you know, that's the goal of a business. But on the other hand, we, as Marion Nestle pointed out, when billions, $30 billion a year is spent in advertising to convince people that what's bad for you is good for you, and then any attempt on the part of the government to set the record straight is squashed by industry, and those in our government who are taking these huge, what would have been called legally, right up through from the founding of this country up until, the 1890s would have been called bribes, and people would have gone to jail for, with these politicians taking these huge amounts, hundreds of thousands, millions, tens of millions of dollars from these corporations to ensure that the government agencies set up to protect us and inform us don't do that. I mean, what has happened? Ray Kroc, the founder of McDonald's, said, and I quote, "We have found that we cannot trust some people who are nonconformists. We will make conformists out of them in a hurry. The organization cannot trust the individual. The individual must trust the organization." End quote. Ray Kroc, good Republican. Hundreds of millions of dollars of government subsidies for training, by the way, go to McDonald's. Do you know that that if you're a fast food franchise and you hire minimum wage people and employ them for 400 hours, you get a $2,400 subsidy from the government. That's $6 an hour. The government pays fast food companies to hire people that they pay $6 an hour to. We, with our tax dollars, are paying the wages of the fast food industry. Get out to vote today on MoveOn.org. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
A real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Wouldn't it be great if you could get everything you need for successful estate planning in one package? Well, now you can. The new Master Estate Kit offers a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free family legal guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
What do you think I like about commuting with nature as much as I do? Being on the tractor as much time as I do or spending time with the animals.
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer. Yeah. You're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature. And you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday. For Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
The Mike Molloy Show.
Joining us now is Jason Campbell with the Christian Action Network.
Well, since 1991, the gay movement has gone down to Disney to do these gay days. You've had events where you've had Mickey Mouse with Goofy in sexual positions.
Ah! Homosexual movies are shown on the Disney transportation systems. And what kind of movies, for God's sake, do they show on these buses?
Triple X.
Oh, you're kidding.
If a child's riding beside one of the buses and looks up and says, Daddy, what is that on the television monitor? Right. It's going to be an embarrassing moment.
Oh, it'll be worse than embarrassing. The child will be scarred for life.
Right. That's what the homosexuals want.
Well, I know. They're after the kids. Now, the only thing I'm afraid of is somebody just tuned in the program and never heard the program before and just went, oh, Jesus, this guy is really a right-wing freak.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Keep rolling along. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, rolling along on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting all across the United States and on the Sirius satellite. If you have a Ford, Chrysler, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Mazda, Land Rover, Dodge, Jeep, Mini, Volkswagen, Audi, Nissan, Infiniti, or Jaguar automobile, you can pop an antenna on it and get the station. And, of course, we're on land-based radio stations all over the country. And also broadcasting on the Internet, IEAmericaRadio.com and RadioPower.org, and the shows will be archived on WhiteRoseSociety.org. In 1991, only four states, now 1991, that was 12 years ago, only four states had obesity rates of 15% or higher. Only four. Today, 37 states. Marine in Shalland, Washington, I believe. Correct me if I'm pronouncing it wrong. Welcome to the program. You call 1-800-TALK-YES. Thanks for calling. Maureen? Yeah. Either Maureen isn't there or she's there. Okay, Maureen, welcome to the program. I still can't hear you. I guess she's not there. Okay. All righty. We can't hear you, Maureen. I'm sorry. You might want to try calling back. We'll pick up the call in the next hour. The annual health costs to America stemming from obesity are $240 billion, which, oddly, is exactly double the revenue of the fast food industry. So we're spending twice as much money providing health care to people who are consuming the products of this industry and getting sick as a result of it. And now, again, you know, this raises the question, well, should we tax them? Should we control them? Should we change? Or should government just butt out? But then you get this issue of, okay, if government butts out, who butts in? You know, you've got this huge vacuum that happens when government gets out of the way and corporations leap into the fray. And then you're back to a form of feudalism. Between 1984 and 1993, 9-year period, the number of fast food restaurants doubled in Great Britain. Over the same period, that same 9-year period, after obesity rates being relatively steady for 1,000 years, over that same 9-year period, obesity doubled in Great Britain, 1984 and 1993. And now we have the situation where the U.S. Is producing enough fruit and vegetables. I know Stan in Birmingham's on the line, but we've got just
30 seconds or so left here on the show, Stan. So if you could call back in the next hour, I'd appreciate it. We'll pick up your call then.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. President Bush claims troops are making progress in Iraq now, roughly 3 months since he declared an end to major fighting there.
Since the end of the major combat operations in Iraq, the nation has been liberated from tyranny and is on the path to self-government and peace.
In a news conference earlier at the White House, Mr. Bush said conditions in most areas of Iraq are stable and peaceful. He did admit, though, pockets of dangerous resistance remain without broaching the subject, really, of the near daily deaths of American soldiers there. The president said a stable Iraq is critical to the stability of the Middle East, and Mideast stability is critical to our nation's security, in his words. The president went on to say the search for weapons of mass destruction will continue, and he's confident they will eventually be found. Meanwhile, across the Atlantic, British Prime Minister Tony Blair is shrugging off calls to say specifically if he will in fact resign if no weapons of mass destruction are found in Iraq. Responding to questions at a news briefing earlier, Blair said he believes intelligence gathered before the war there was accurate.
As I've said constantly to you, I believe the intelligence we received is correct. So that is my view. It's been my view all the way through. And I think in relation to finding the actual evidence, well, let's let the Iraq survey group do their work.
Blair reiterated he does not want troops to stay in Iraq any longer than necessary. He only wants to see Iraq get back on its feet politically and economically. Saudi Arabia's foreign minister says the U.S. can now interview a Saudi citizen who apparently knew two of the September 11th hijackers while living in San Diego. During an interview on ABC's Good Morning America, Prince Saud al-Faisal said U.S. and British officials had already questioned Omar al-Bayoumi, who had been released after no evidence was found linking him to the terrorist plot. The prince said National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice told him yesterday the U.S. wants to talk to him again. However, he dismissed suggestions he be questioned without Saudi officials present.
Hey, watch it!
Down in front. Hey, we made it.
Yeah.
4 hours back-to-back Godzilla movies.
Wait.
Sorry. Did you see that cute girl on the end as we came in?
Oh, who could miss her?
So ask her out.
What?
No. Excuse me. My friend here wants to know if the girl on the aisle will go out with her. Pass it down.
Ask the girl over there if she wants to meet this loner. Pass it down.
Hey, that dude over there wants to meet the girl next to you when the flick's over.
Excuse me, miss. There's a guy down there who wants to know if you're an organ and tissue donor.
Yes, of course.
Are you an organ and tissue donor? It's a simple but important question. Talk to your family today. Make sure they know your decision so there'll be no question later.
Hey, buddy. She said yeah. Oh, hey, buddy. Me too.
What? Share your life. Share your decision. Call 1-800-355-SHARE for a free brochure. 1-800-355-SHARE. A message from the Advertising Council and the Coalition on Donation.
The United States could very well soon find itself in the midst of talks with North Korea. Secretary of State Colin Powell today says there is a, quote, distinct possibility. China, North Korea, the United States, as well as perhaps a number of several other nations, may take part in another round of multilateral talks later this year. The topic, of course, will be Pyongyang's nuclear ambitions. The last time the United States, China, and North Korea all met was back in April. Since that Beijing conference, Washington has been pushing for more talks that would include both South Korea and Japan.
Hi, Tom Baudette for Motel 6. Dog owners will be happy to know whether your best friend is a purebred show dog or the lovably mixed-up product of a neighborhood indiscretion. They're equally welcome at Motel 6. No judgments here. So put the old Cocker Chow Labrador mix in the back seat and hit the road. But first call 1-800-4-MOTEL-6 or visit motel6.com. I'm Tom Baudet, and we'll leave the light on for you. Anacor Hotel.
Anti-globalization protests continue today in Montreal, Canada, where trade ministers from some of the World Trade Organization member nations are discussing how to reduce trade barriers around the globe. Alistair Wanklin tells us the protesters haven't been very successful in disrupting the talks.
The protests continue, but so does the meeting between trade ministers. Spokeswoman for the protesters, Tamara Herman, said Canadian police had crippled the demonstrations.
The sheer numbers that were arrested yesterday, that has a big impact on us. We also, our resources are a bit more drained.
Some of those arrested were said by police to have been carrying makeshift petrol bombs. The Canadian government said violence discredits protests. Meanwhile, as this informal round of talks draws to a close, anti-globalization protesters say they'll regroup at the coming full WTO meeting in Mexico. Alistair Wanklin reporting.
And a two-year-old Las Vegas girl who was left in a hot car earlier this week has died, a local television saying she died earlier this morning. I'm Corey Morris. This is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Lycus with today's Car Clinic Minute. Chattanooga has its choo-choo and the Orient its express. But did you know that your car has a train of its very own? When I come back, I'll tell you all about it. Want to know the secret to finding a shop that can keep your car running like new? Find the cleanest shop in town, where cleaning is top priority. Not talking about clean floors, but better shops have those too. I mean shops that have the best training, equipment, and chemistry to clean every air, fuel, and fluid system in your vehicle. Keep it clean, and you don't have to keep replacing parts. Find your clean shop at bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. Speeding locomotives have nothing on you. Even energy on Soul Train can't match that of your drivetrain. Okay, enough hinting. Drivetrain refers to all the pieces that together deliver power from engine to wheels. We're talking clutch, torque converter, CV joints, differentials, universal joints, and transmissions. Just like the hip bones connected to the leg bone, all these parts work in concert. And although you don't have to shovel coal to fire them up, like all trains, you do have to schedule maintenance. I'm Bobby Lycus. Lycus, you'll love us.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of an earlier program, so don't call today, and thanks for listening.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back to our program, speaking to you on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting on terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast, from the depths of outer space on the Sirius radio satellite covering North and Central America, and streaming live on the Internet from IEAmericaRadio.com and RadioPower.org. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. In this hour, we're going to ask the question, should corporations be considered persons under the law? And we've got a great guest on, and we'll get to him in just a moment. But first, from the last hour, Maureen had called, and we dropped her just before the end of the hour. We had a technical problem on the board. So, Maureen, I want to let you get in here and have your say, and then we'll move on to our guest. Maureen, let's see, you are in Washington State. Shaylin, Washington, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking my call. I did have a comment about the political labels.
Right.
As I conceptualize it, the political spectrum is a line drawn. You have the, on the right, you have unregulated, supposedly free market capitalism, privately concentrated ownership and power. On the left, you've got state concentrated power or communism. And in the middle, somewhere, you have some kind of balance of public-private power and ownership. For me, what works a whole lot better is our ideal of democracy is a maximum number of the people participating in decision making and in the ownership of resources. And the other end that we're trying to get away from is dictatorship. The extreme would be one-man rule. I don't think that ever really happens. You always have people that make that possible, but a group, but a small group ruling the majority.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, I don't think that the middle necessarily is where we want to be. But I just thought that was...
Okay. Good point and well taken, Maureen.
Okay.
Thank you. In fact, we'll explore that right now with our guest and take that a little farther. Maureen, thanks for calling. I appreciate your call. Our guest today is Dr. Yoron Brook. Dr. Brook is the president and executive director of the Ayn Rand Institute. I believe that's Ayn Rand, AYNRAND.org on the Internet. He has published in academic as well as popular publications, taught and lectured extensively in the United States and abroad on issues related to the Middle East conflict, terrorism and American foreign policy, finance and ethics, international finance, banking, and corporate governance. Dr. Brook, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, I'm pleased to have you here. In an article... Well, before I get into this, let me just set up my understanding of this and then let you take a shot at it. My read of history is that when the founders of this country were putting together a constitutional republic, they had this very clear understanding that historically humans in what we call civilization had been ruled by one of three kinds of power. They had either been ruled by warlord kings, they had been ruled by theocrats, who ruled by a claim of divine right, or they had been ruled by the extreme wealthy, that was called feudalism, and that they were going to start a fourth way. They were going to try a fourth system, that being rule by consent of the people, and there's people ruling themselves. And the key to this was that humans would have rights, and that any institution that humans create would have only privileges, and that those privileges would be defined by we, the people, the holders of the rights. And so churches had only privileges. Government itself had only privileges. Corporations had only privileges. Nonprofits had only privileges. The local Moose Club had only privileges. All human institutions had privileges, and the holders of the rights were the humans. And then in 1886, according to John Chandler Bancroft Davis, the court reporter of the U.S. Supreme Court, in the Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad case, the Supreme Court, he said, in fact, if you read the decision, the court did not say this, but in the headnote, the court reporter said that the court had said that corporations should have the rights of persons under the 14th Amendment, not churches, not government, not any other form of human association, just corporations. And ever since then, we've seen this wild takeover of our governmental institutions by corporations claiming the First Amendment right to donate money to politics and Fourth Amendment rights of privacy and on and on and on. And I understand from speaking with my producer that you think that that's a good thing, that corporations have rights under the Bill of Rights.
Wow, that was quite an intro.
I know, it's a long rant. I'll give you an equal one.
Well, let me disagree with you kind of from the beginning to end, really.
Okay.
There was a fourth form of government that the founders rejected, and rejected explicitly if you read both Madison and Jefferson and I think Washington. And they rejected explicitly the form of government of majority rule, that is the form of government called democracy, which was prevalent in Greece and in some city-states through the centuries. And they explicitly wrote about democracy and described its evils, the evil represented primarily by Socrates having to take poison because the majority has decided that his particular speech or his advocacy of his philosophy was bad, and therefore he had to die. And of course he accepted it because he was for democracy. So they rejected democracy, and they established something very unique. They established what you described correctly as a constitutional republic, which is not a majority rule. It precludes or excludes certain issues from the right of the majority to dictate. That is, you have freedom of speech, whether the majority thinks that's a good thing or a bad thing. You have freedom to your own property, whether the majority thinks it's a good thing or a bad thing. And in that sense, they established the first non-democratic government that was still served the public. It served the public by protecting the individual's rights, the right to life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. So that is the essential nature of the American government. We've shifted away from that essential nature and become more democratic, I think, to our own detriment, and less, you know, less sticking to this idea of rights. But let me now address this issue of corporations. I don't think corporations are persons. I don't think corporations are individuals. Clearly they're not. What corporations are, and protecting corporations and granting them, in a sense, the right to free speech and other rights, is basically a recognition of the individuals, the owners of the corporations' right to property and right to pursue their own happiness and right to liberty. That is, corporations get their rights, and I believe churches do and non-for-profits do and all other entities that are formed by a collection of individuals. They get their rights from the rights of the individual. A corporation is no different than a corner grocery store. A corner grocery store happens to have one owner. A corporation has many owners, but they each derive their right to act from the rights of their owners.
Actually, that's not the case. If you read case law and you look at the Supreme Court decisions, you see that corporations are clearly defined as a separate entity. That when you create a corporation, you are giving birth to a new individual. Our question, should corporations be considered persons under the law? You are giving birth to a new person. You get a federal employer ID number. It's a unique identity. It is capable of standing at court. It is capable of suing or being sued. It has its own identity, and its rights and privileges are unique to it.
But that is true.
The only right to privilege who own it.
The only rights or privileges unique to a corporation are the issue of limited liability. When you form a partnership, like a law firm or a consulting firm, you get an employer ID, you can be sued, you have all those. The only difference between a corporation and a partnership, according to the law, is the issue of limited liability. And the issue of limited liability is a contractual issue primarily. It's recognized in the law, but it is primarily a contractual issue between the shareholders, i.e. the owners of the corporation, and its creditors, that is, the banks and other forms of creditors that are out there. That is the essential difference between a corporation and other forms of business. And again, whatever rights the corporation has, and I believe it should have all these rights, it derives from its owners. The rights of its owners.
Corporations, for example, have the right of citizenship. That is to say, a corporation can cease being an American citizen and start being a Bahamian citizen in 1 hour. You and I can't do that. A corporation can be fined. A corporation can't experience pain.
But corporations can be fined, as can partnerships, and can any corporate entity, as can a not-for-profit, it can be fined. A not-for-profit can shift its domicile from the United States to Bermuda. And it's also untrue to say that a corporation is a citizen. It clearly isn't. A corporation cannot vote. A corporation does not serve in the army. A corporation is indeed, today in America, corporations have far fewer rights than individuals. Individuals
Therefore,
have free
why
speech.
Should, than why should corporations have the right to free speech?
Why do they have
Nike,
the right
for
to
example,
speech?
Have the right to lie to people?
They don't have the right to lie to people any more than you have a right to lie to people. You have a right to free speech, and corporations have a right to free speech because they are owned by individuals like you. They are just an instrument for the owners to express themselves. The government has no right to limit the expression of anybody, not the CEO of a corporation, not the owners of a corporation, not its shareholders, not you, not me, not anyone, not a not-for-profit, not a partnership. The government should not have a right. It does, unfortunately, limit speech primarily of corporations. But it shouldn't have. It shouldn't limit the speech of anybody.
But a corporation is not an anybody. A corporation is a legal fiction.
But that's not true.
It's
a corporation is a legal entity. There's a difference between a legal entity and a legal fiction. Just like what's the difference between a corporation and a partnership? A partnership is a legal entity, just like a corporation is.
There are
a
different
legal
structures
entity.
that have different laws defining them.
Sure, but the one is as legitimate as the other. The one.
So then, why
you
is a partnership
fiction? Why do you say a corporation is a legal fiction? It's an
why
entity.
Does a partnership then not have the right of privacy and not have the right of free speech, but a
of course
corporation
it does.
Should?
Of course it does. And if it doesn't, let me just say that if it doesn't, then it should. That is, I'm not defending the U.S. Supreme Court, and I'm not defending the way the government executes its power. Indeed, American corporations do not have the right to free speech, as the tobacco industry is discovering. They are denied free speech at every opportunity. They are heavily regulated. They are taxed. They every right that we as ordinary individuals take for granted, the corporate entities, and once you become a CEO, you do not have. That is, the problem with American corporations today is not that they have too many freedoms, is that they're not free enough, and I think we all suffer the consequences of have corporations that are put in a straitjacket. And indeed, that's true of partnerships, and that's true of all legal entities out there. We live today in a country which restrains our ability to act, and I think the Founding Fathers would be horrified by the state of America today and the violation of rights that is committed by our government left and right against corporations, individuals.
I agree, although I'd say they'd be horrified by the violations of rights being done by our corporations.
Corporations,
let's continue this conversation. We've got a break coming up here. We're talking with Dr. Euron Brook of the Ayn Rand Institute. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Nice drive, Jim.
Ah, thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was a straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risk.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Hi, folks. Jesse Ventura here to talk to you about InPhone, the advanced, enhanced, totally modern directory assistance available all across this great country of ours. Just dial 888-411-1111, and the super-friendly operator will help you access phone numbers or movie times, even driving directions to the theater. So call InPhone at 888-411-1111 and tell them Governor Jesse sent you. InPhone, how can we help you?
Only 89 cents for any call up to 15 minutes. Only 5 cents a minute after that. Your first 5 calls are free.
Attention all plaintiffs. Personal injury, negligence, premises liability, medical malpractice, product liability, commercial cases. Receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Call now, 800-586-5493. Get cash now on your pending lawsuit. No risk, no payments. We only collect when your case is settled. Call 800-586-5493. Express lawsuit funding can help you. 800-586-5493.
I have one question. Why? This is the question that pops into my head whenever I flip through any of those slick catalogs hawking the latest in high-dollar, high-tech gizmos for yuppies. Why is so much of our society's brain power and research money being frittered away on frivolous crap? You want crap? Try house slippers with headlights. Let's hope that this person isn't trying to invent anything else. Or this, a $250 rapid-fire toaster that can pop out 130 slices of toast per hour right in your kitchen. If this thing appeals to you, let me be the first to tell you, you've got a toast problem, Buster, and it's time to spend some money for professional help, not for a 130-slice-an-hour toaster. Some of this crap is not just crap, but absurdly expensive crap, pitched to the pompous and over-pampered rich, including the $90,000 Audi A8, which has 65,000 electrodes to scan your fingertips so you can open its doors by waving your hand in front of it. It also has a computer that automatically tunes the radio to the driver's favorite station and sculpts the front seat to the contours of the driver's bottom. If that's not enough for the lazy class, try the FMD 700 iTrek TV glasses that use prisms to alter the line of sight so you can lie flat in bed and watch TV or videos. No more need to strain yourself by sitting up. There's even a techno-consumer magazine, aptly named Stuff, that has unwittingly expressed the whining wasteland ethic behind this mindless production and consumption of crap. We've launched missions to Mars, says Stuff, so why can't we build a robot that can pour us a drink? This is Jim Hightower saying, well, Stuff, undoubtedly we can and probably will. But the question is, why? The exploration of Mars is at least about the reach of the human spirit. Not being willing to reach for your own drink is about human sloth. Shouldn't we focus our technological genius on the world's real needs?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
You can't always get what you want.
Welcome back to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America radio network. Lee Iacocca, another Ford executive, according to Jeff Milchen of ReclaimDemocracy.org, had used a life value estimate of $200,000 as being what a human life was worth, and priced the company cost from severe burn injuries with the Pinto at $67,000 per incident. Next, they calculated the cost of saving an estimated 180 people from being burned to death. It actually turned out to be 500 who died. And preventing scores of serious injuries by recalling the Pintos and fixing the fuel tank. Their conclusion? Killing 180 people, maiming hundreds more, and shattering families' lives was more profitable than spending $11 per auto, Ford's estimate, to make them far safer. They hid behind the shield of the corporate Fourth Amendment right to privacy to conceal this crime, and this corporation cannot be put in prison. We're talking with Dr. Yaron Brook of the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. Dr. Brook, what's wrong with that?
Well, that's complete nonsense. If they committed a crime, the CEO and the corporate executives of that corporation could be put in prison, as we're seeing right now. Martha Stewart might go to prison.
Martha Stewart has not committed a corporate crime. She committed insider trading, which is the same thing George Bush did.
Sure, if you commit a crime in the name of a corporation, you go to prison. Who is going to go to prison
in a corporation?
Is not an individual, therefore you can't put it behind bars. But the whole depiction of the Pinto case is absurd. If you buy a cheap car in America today, any cheap car, is it more or less safe than an expensive car? It's less safe than an expensive car because an expensive car, they spend a lot of money on safety precautions. A Mercedes-Benz is more safe than a Chevy Blazer.
But these guys knew in advance that $11 modification was going to be responsible for 500 deaths.
Well,
this was a cover-up.
They knew it after people started dying. It actually went to trial. They did not. Their privacy right was not protected under the Fourth Amendment. All the documents were shown, and they got sued, and they paid up. People have to make the evaluation every day. Every day when you build a product. Of how much risk do people take? That is an evaluation people make every day in every product that you build, because there is no such thing as a riskless product. There is no such thing as a risk-free society.
How much do you price
a human life? You make it $60,000, you make it $2 million. At some point, you have to put a price, because every product is potentially risky, particularly an automobile on the street. And if you make it risk-free, then it costs $100,000 and nobody can afford to drive. And what you would do then is price most America out of being able to afford an automobile if you made them risk-free.
The word corporation does not exist in the United States Constitution.
Sure, it doesn't. Neither does the word non-for-profit organization.
Thomas Jefferson,
I have a right as the CEO of a non-for-profit organization to express my entities' views about the world, and I have free speech just like the CEO of a corporation has the right to free speech and express the views of the corporation.
No, you as an individual citizen of the United States protected by
the Bill of
Rights.
No, me as the CEO of a non-for-profit. I have a right to express myself, just as the representatives of a corporation have the right to express themselves. There's no difference between the two.
Sure, but the corporation itself.
But what is a corporation itself if not the owners and employees of that corporation?
That's a legal abstraction. When those owners die, the corporation continues to exist.
There is no other entity other than You know, in finance, I'm a finance professor by trading. In finance, we view a corporation as a nexus of contracts. All it is a place in which contractual relationships are set. And, you know, employment contracts, debt contracts, ownership contracts, that's it. When a corporation
why should an entity like that, that's that abstract, have human rights under
because
the Bill of Rights? We've got a break coming up here, Dr. Brooks. If you can hold the line for just a moment, Dr. Brooks, we've got to go to a commercial. We'll be back in about 2 minutes, and I'd love to hear your response to that. Get out and vote today at MoveOn.org. Stay with the Tom Hartman program. We'll return in just a few moments.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
The general public attitude toward wetlands has changed dramatically over the years. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Many people once regarded wetlands with fear and even revulsion, but over time, people have learned to appreciate these features of the landscape. And Velisis has studied this change in attitudes, and she's written about it in a book titled Discovering the Unknown Landscape, A History of America's Wetlands. Velisis says early European settlers had a negative view of wetlands in North America. For them, marshes and swamps were mysterious and not at all like the lands they had left behind.
When colonists first arrived, they thought that wetlands were evil, useless, unkempt, mosquito-ridden, awful places. They thought they were places where Satan dwelled. These were places that Indians hid. So they had all sorts of cultural baggage about wetlands.
Velisis says these superstitions lasted a long time, and even when settlers did go into the swamps, it was to cut down trees. They thought cutting down a swamp forest was a good way to make money off land they considered useless. Velisis says as the settlers spread across the continent, people drained millions of acres of wetlands. Part of their reason was to create farmland, and part of it was to fight malaria.
People thought that wetlands were the source of malaria, which was an important disease back then. It was a significant disease. They thought that air above wetlands actually caused it. They didn't realize that mosquitoes caused it.
Velisis says the malaria problem diminished with the drainage, although not for reasons the pioneers believed. Velisis says attitudes toward wetlands have taken a major turn in recent decades. People now recognize their value as homes to birds and fish. Velisis says many people now want to protect wetlands instead of draining them. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
One, two, three, four.
Talk radio for the rest of us. You're listening to the Tom Hartman radio program on the iAmerica Radio Network. Sales of the 200 largest corporations in the world equal 27.5% of the world's gross domestic product, according to the United Nations. The 82 largest American corporations in the year 2000 election cycle contributed $33,045,832 to political action committees. And as somebody who's running the board, kill that music, please. In 94% of the U.S. House of Representatives races, the candidate who won the most money won the race. We're speaking with Dr. Yuron Brook of the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. Dr. Brook, how can you, on the one hand, say that a corporation is a nexus of contracts, an abstraction, a legal abstraction, and on the other hand, say that the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, and presumably the 14th as well, the Bill of Rights that the founders fought and many of them died to put in place, that specifically say persons, people, and humans should be applied to these institutions, these abstractions?
Well, as I said, they should be applied because it is individuals who own them. And let me just explain what I mean by this. When I, as an individual, have a right to all those rights in the Bill of Rights, so the right to life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. I do not lose those rights. When I group up with maybe another 10, maybe another 20, maybe another million people to form a commercial venture, I do not lose those rights to speech, to property, to privacy when I form that group. The rights of that group...
I'm not saying you do.
Let me finish. The rights of that group are derived from my rights. So let's say I own shares in a corporation. I have a right to speak. When the corporation speaks, it is speaking for me. If I don't like the way the corporation is speaking on my behalf, I can sell those shares or I can vote for different management. But they are speaking on my behalf. They are my representatives. And in that sense, the corporation is my entity, and it whatever rights it has are derived from my rights. That is, I'm the one who has the right. So when I form a corporation, I don't lose my right to speech. And indeed, the problem in America today, and the reason corporations spend so much money on politics, is that the rights of the owners of corporate America, the rights of shareholders, are being attacked left and right by Congress and by the president. We have regulation in this country that is just bizarre and absurd. We have overtaxation of corporations, and that is not the fact that they're attacking the rights of the corporation, which, as you said, is just a legal entity. They're attacking my right as an owner of that corporation. It is my property. It is my free speech that is being attacked. If I own the shares of a tobacco company and you limit my ability to advertise, you are limiting my right as an individual to express my opinion about tobacco. When
but
you
you're also
attack
using
me
that corporation
for, course,
to
the
try
next
to...
stage is that you attack my ability as an owner of McDonald's to try to sell hamburgers. Or, you know, you attack my right as an owner of Ford to sell automobiles. So it is my right as an individual that you are attacking, not, you know, some amorphous, ambiguous right of a corporation. You're right. We should bring it back to individual rights, to personal rights. Let's respect the right of the owners of a corporation, the owners of partnerships, the owners of self-proprietorships to their right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
I don't think that anybody is suggesting that a stockholder should give up their rights.
By regulating corporations, you are violating the rights of individuals.
I own one share of Marriott Corporation, which I bought many years ago so I could get a 10% discount in their hotels. I don't think that that means that I can speak on behalf of Marriott or that
you
if Marriott
you can't speak
is,
on behalf
is,
of Marriott, but whether you like it or not, Marriott speaks on your behalf. That is, you are now owner of Marriott. When they speak as a corporate entity, they're speaking on your behalf. And if you don't like what Marriott
what you're
represents,
suggesting is
then you
that,
should sell that share.
Yeah, what you're suggesting is that because we humans have rights under the Constitution of the United States, that when we create a secondary entity, that entity should have human rights, and that entity should also shield us from responsibility for our actions.
Entity does not shield us from
actions. Well, that was your starting point,
is
that a corporation gives you limited liability.
To be shielded. The corporation shields us from liability derived from other parties who have engaged with that corporation knowing that shield exists. That is, it is a voluntary contractual relationship between two entities that know the rules of the game. So, but if the corporation is engaged in criminal activity, and as when corporations have been engaged in criminal activity, as, for example, you could argue Enron or some of these other corporations have, people will go to jail. There will be responsibility will be held. Companies are driven into bankruptcy. Shareholders lose everything in those corporations when those corporations misbehave. So the idea that somehow corporations don't suffer the consequences of criminal activity is just wrong. I mean, open the newspaper every day, and every day there's somebody justly or usually unjustly being brought to prosecution for what the corporation or the representatives of the corporation, because corporations can't act beyond what their representatives act. When the representatives act, the corporation suffers.
1-800, I strongly disagree. Let me just say, but we've got a caller here, so we'll go to 1-800-TALK. Yes, is our number 8255937. Roy from Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Roy, you've got a question for our guest.
Yeah, hi Tom. I actually had two. Would your guest support a three strikes and you're out rule, so that any time that a corporate executive officer is convicted of something, third time they dissolve the corporation?
Well, I think Roy, my guest is ignoring the fact that corporations themselves get convicted of things. But finish your question.
Okay, well, if the corporation gets convicted, how about they just ban them, liquidate them, and throw them out?
Corporate death penalty. Dr.
I mean, we put shoplifters in jail for life.
The fact is, corporations that engage in criminal activity, that's exactly what happens. They get fined huge amounts of money, and most of them go bankrupt. That you don't need a
you are sir, you are either absolutely a total liar or totally ignorant. One of the two.
Well, give me an example of a corporation that's been engaged in criminal activity.
We don't need personal attacks
in the
show here, Roy. Yeah.
When you say that the average corporation, when they get caught, go bankrupt.
Get caught of doing what?
Name me a tobacco company that has gone out of business.
Well, what has the tobacco company done that is criminal?
Years.
Tell me what tobacco companies have done that is criminal. And the only reason, by the way, the federal government is keeping the tobacco industry alive is in order to suck as much tax money out of them as possible. They are a cash cow for politicians. That's why they're kept alive.
I think Roy, we've got your point, and I appreciate your calling in. Dave in Silverdale, Washington, has a question for Dr. Brook. Dave, welcome to the program.
Not really a question as much. It's just, you know, this, when I listen to this, this is
I can't hear.
Whoever's running the board there, turn Dave's volume up. And Dave, if you could start over again, we couldn't hear you.
Okay, thanks, Tom. Not so much a question as a comment in that, you know, I'm a person who probably thinks like a libertarian in many ways, reads libertarian materials, and subscribes to libertarian mailing lists, but this is why I can never really be a libertarian, because it's ultimately kind of a very intellectual argument. It's heartless. It's devoid of ideas like personal responsibility and the kind of the sacred nature of humanness. And to now assign the all the liberties of and freedoms of the individual to a corporation, but just accept the fact that any liabilities are masked. And I think the previous caller did have one point with, like, the tobacco industry. How do you kill millions of people? How do corporations destroy the environment and then stand blameless and be shielded by liability? And, you know, I mean, your caller gives himself away when he says that, oh, corporations, they're always, look at all of them being prosecuted, most of them wrongly. And so, you know, I mean, I guess if you can go out nowadays and apologize for millionaires, the sky's the limit in terms of speaking engagements and book deals.
Okay, Dr. Brook, thank you, Dave, for your comments. Dr. Brook, you want to comment?
Was there a question there? Because I could barely hear him.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Let me just comment that I'm not a libertarian, so, you know, I don't want that confusion to get in. I you know, libertarians do not believe in morality. I believe in a very strong moral code. Libertarians, many of, do not believe in government at all. I believe in a strong government that does only one thing but does it well, and that is protect individual rights.
Okay. Dr. Brook, the Environmental Protection Agency, which we... Richard Nixon brought into being, had a whistleblower tip on a chemical factory that they were emitting toxins. They went out and said, we'd like to inspect your factory. The corporation said, no, you can't come in here. We have Fourth Amendment rights of protection. Now, this corporation also asserts that its employees lose their Fourth Amendment rights of privacy as soon as they step on the property of the corporation, because the corporation owns that property. And so it says that it can extract their bodily fluids and analyze them. Right. It can listen in on their telephone conversations. It can monitor their keystrokes. So the corporation claims that its employees have lost their Fourth Amendment rights of privacy. But the corporation claimed that the EPA couldn't come in because of privacy. So the EPA hired a pilot and a small plane, flew over the top of the factory, took pictures, found, in fact, that the corporation was polluting. This corporation sued the EPA and took it all the way to the Supreme Court, claiming that their Fourth Amendment right of privacy was violated. None of the stockholders of the corporation were speaking out on this. This was the corporation itself.
Sure they were. Whether they liked it or not, they were speaking out on it. That is, the owners of the corporation elect the managers to speak for them. When the managers are protecting Fourth Amendment rights, they are protecting the Fourth Amendment rights of the shareholders. That land is owned by somebody. It is owned by the shareholders. If the EPA steps on that land, they are violating the shareholders' Fourth Amendment rights. When you limit the speech of a corporation, you're violating the shareholders' freedom of speech. The managers speak for the shareholders, and if you don't like that as a shareholder, you can replace the management or you can sell your shares. Now, let me also add that I believe, you know, I believe the EPA should not exist, but I think that, yes, of course the corporation has the right, the Fourth Amendment right. You can't search and seizure somebody's property. There is a somebody here. The somebody here is the shareholders. And let me also add that privacy rights are derivative of property rights. You do not have complete privacy when you enter onto my property. If I ask you at the door whether you have a gun or not, you can't say, I have the right for property. I don't have to tell you when walking into my house whether you have a gun or not. I have every right, if you want to come into my house, to search you. If you don't want to come into my house, you can leave. That's fine. The same with employment. It's my property, i.e. the shareholders' property, and they have a right to determine the conditions of employment that an employee engages in. And if the employee doesn't like it, they can turn around and walk away.
So the corporation has the right to poison our air?
The corporation has a right to act in its own interest. If it is poisoning the air, you have a right to sue the corporation and demand damages and to shut them down if they are truly causing you harm, but the burden of proof is on you to show that they are poisoning you. Absolutely.
Okay, 1-800-TALK-YES is the phone number, 825-5937, and Matt in Hawaii is on the line. Matt, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, I'm just calling to support your guest there, and I agree.
Dr. Yuron Brook.
Yeah, almost wholeheartedly. He's logical. And I think, I mean, it's obvious that you have sort of a visceral kind of disdain for the corporation, and I think
me,
yes,
I've created seven corporations in my life that have done, several of them have done very well. I have no disdain for corporations at all.
Wow, I am really surprised at that. The way you've come off during this conversation,
I don't think that a corporation should have the rights that a human should. Yeah,
that?
I own one share of Marriott, but I've started seven corporations that have done a quarter of $1 billion in business in the last 30 years.
If your corporations were owned 100% by you, do they then have your rights?
No. They are a separate entity.
So you, as the sole owner of a corporation, have no right to speech, have no right to property,
none of the
constitutional guarantees, even though you own 100% of that corporate entity.
Your question embodies a double bind. You said you, as the sole owner of a corporation, have.
Absolutely.
That's like saying you, as the husband of your wife, don't have the right of free speech. You, as the owner of your dog, I mean,
well, the corporation
as a human
speaks
being,
for
have
you.
The right
if
of
you're
free
100%
speech.
Over in a corporation, then a corporation speaks for you as the owner. Does it then, when you are in the role of CEO of that corporation, do you not have right to speech? Of course you do. And therefore, it makes no difference if it's 50% owned or if it's 1% owned. It still derives its right for speech. Free speech from
okay.
The owner's right for speech.
Matt, hang on just a second here. Matt, did you finish your question? Because we've got Joseph and John in Illinois, North Carolina.
Well, there's just
well.
A couple things. The one gentleman is kind of a not appropriate word with the personal attacks. I mean, I can think of Arthur Anderson right off the bat. I mean, there was a 100-year-old
and it was actually a partnership, not a corporation, but one criminal conviction in the Enron scandal, boom, it's gone. No longer an entity. So to say that it doesn't happen is utterly ridiculous. The other thing is that the corporations pay so much in tax when I would contend, and I think maybe Dr. Brook would agree, the corporations don't make money. It is this legal entity. The only thing that makes money are people, and that would be the employees and the stockholders of that corporation. But corporations pay taxes, huge amounts of taxes.
Corporations make money. Corporations generate profits, and they distribute them in the form of dividends, or they use them for growth.
Double tax because of the tax on dividends. But let me add,
and any
really
income
true.
That I get is double taxed too when I pay sales tax on.
Because every time a corporation pays taxes, it basically passes on those taxes to consumers, and we all pay it through the cost of the goods that the corporation sells. A corporation qua entity. It's meaningless to say that it pays taxes. Some individual pays taxes. It's either the shareholder or the consumer, and I would bet anything, since the shareholders demand a certain return on their money, that is the consumer, the final consumer of the product, that pays all corporate taxes, 100% of them.
Well, that's
just
assuming
an
that corporations don't
tax.
Exist. That's assuming that corporations.
Truth.
Yeah, that's assuming that a corporation is simply an extension of its shareholders.
But it is. I mean, there's nothing else other than an extension of shareholders.
Then why is it recognized as a separate entity at law?
Well, I'm not going to justify the Supreme Court's ruling. I'm telling you what I think it should be, not what it is necessarily.
Great. Okay. Thank you. Dr. Yaron Brook of the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. Dr. Brook, thank you very much for being with us on the program today. We are out of time. We've got a couple of callers here. We'll wrap these up in just a minute. Stick around. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The Long Ride Home by Super 8 Motels.
Somewhere between 14 hours in a minivan, between the world's largest pothole and the hubcap that got away, between five, look at the horses, and one amazing sunset. Somewhere between where you are and where you're going, there's a Super 8. See you along the way.
All Super 8 motels are individually owned and operated.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was a straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risks.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
a few more years on them.
No. I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Tom Hartman Show.
The computerized voting machines in the last election, our question is the theft of your vote. On our chat room here, Brain Shrub points out that H is the eighth letter of the alphabet. A is the first letter of the alphabet. So if you take that 18181, the exact number of votes that three different candidates in one county in Texas got on these computerized voting machines, and you simply convert it to letters, it becomes... Is it a conspiracy or a coincidence?
Okay, first of all, I wanted to say congratulations. We were elected to the White House by one of the narrowest margins in history. 63% of registered voters.
Wait a second. You wanted me to poll registered voters?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program, where democracy is still alive and well. We've been talking with Dr. Euron Brook of the Ayn Rand Institute, and we just have 2.5 minutes here or so to wrap up this hour, but we will continue in the next hour. We've got, I think, six folks on the hold. John in Coverdale, Illinois, had a comment or question. John, welcome to the program.
Yes, thanks. Hey, my question is to your caller. If I steal a car, or if I steal like three cars, I end up going to jail for like 25 years. But yet, it seems that if I defraud investors or if I raid a pension fund of $20 million, $30 million, well, then I go to jail for like three. I was wondering if he could justify this.
Well, I would suggest that his response, and I certainly can't put words in his mouth, but I think that the response of that, of the philosophical perspective that he represents, is that those laws are just disproportionate and wrong, and that, you know, crimes are crimes and people should go to jail for them. My concern is that if you steal a car, you go to jail for 25 years. If a corporation commits a crime, the corporation can't go to jail. And there is a corporation can live forever. A corporation can tear off part of itself, throw it on the ground, and boom, create a new entity. A corporation can own others of its kind, which is considered slavery. It's illegal in the United States. A corporation has a lot of powers and abilities that humans don't. And when you give corporations this giant club of human rights, which the founders gave to us so that we could beat back government should it ever become oppressive, that corporation then rises up and represents a danger to we the people, to democracy itself. That's my concern about that, John. Thanks for the call. I appreciate your calling. Steve from Santa Fe, New Mexico. We've got just about a minute left here. The others who are on hold, Joseph, Luke, Jerry. Oh, we lost Steve. Luke from Long Beach, California. Luke, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. We got about 30 seconds here, okay. Luke, but if it's going to be a long one, we can hold you over the break. Go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to make a comment about this. You know, the government was set up years ago not for corporations. It was set up for human individual rights. So, in essence, he's, you know, violating his own rights when he's saying if a corporation breaks the law, you know, he's only, I would say he's only, it's kind of hard to explain, but he's violating his own rights when a corporation breaks the law, basically. The government was never set up for, you know, corporation rights, but set up for individual human rights.
There you go.
Doesn't make sense.
Well
what
said,
you're
Luke.
Saying.
Makes perfect sense. Luke, thank you very much for calling, and I appreciate the comments. The folks who are still on hold, stick around. We'll pick your calls up after the top of the hour. 1-800-TALK-YES. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. President Bush claims troops are making progress in Iraq now, roughly 3 months since he declared an end to major fighting there.
Since the end of the major combat operations in Iraq, the nation has been liberated from tyranny and is on the path to self-government and peace.
In a news conference earlier at the White House, Mr. Bush said conditions in most areas of Iraq are stable and peaceful. He did admit, though, pockets of dangerous resistance remain, without broaching the subject, really, of the near daily deaths of American soldiers there. The president said a stable Iraq is critical to the stability of the Middle East, and Mideast stability is critical to our nation's security, in his words. The president went on to say the search for weapons of mass destruction will continue, and he's confident they will eventually be found. Meanwhile, across the Atlantic, British Prime Minister Tony Blair is shrugging off calls to say specifically if he will in fact resign if no weapons of mass destruction are found in Iraq. Responding to questions at a news briefing earlier, Blair said he believes intelligence gathered before the war there was accurate.
As I've said constantly to you, I believe the intelligence we received is correct. So that is my view. It's been my view all the way through. And I think in relation to finding the actual evidence, well, let's let the Iraq Survey Group do their work.
Blair reiterated he does not want troops to stay in Iraq any longer than necessary. He only wants to see Iraq get back on its feet politically and economically. Saudi Arabia's foreign minister says the U.S. can now interview a Saudi citizen who apparently knew two of the September 11th hijackers while living in San Diego. During an interview on ABC's Good Morning America, Prince Saud al-Faisal said U.S. and British officials had already questioned Omar al-Bayoumi, who had been released after no evidence was found linking him to the terrorist plot. The prince said National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice told him yesterday the U.S. wants to talk to him again. However, he dismissed suggestions he be questioned without Saudi officials present.
Hey, watch it!
Down in front. Hey, we made it.
Yeah.
4 hours back-to-back Godzilla movies.
Wait.
Sorry. Did you see that cute girl on the end as we came in?
Oh, who could miss her?
So ask her out.
What?
No. Excuse me. My friend here wants to know if the girl on the aisle will go out with her. Pass it down.
Ask the girl over there if she wants to meet this loner. Pass it down.
Hey, that dude over there wants to meet the girl next to you when the flick's over.
Excuse me, miss. There's a guy down there who wants to know if you're an organ and tissue donor.
Yes, of course.
Are you an organ and tissue donor? It's a simple but important question. Talk to your family today. Make sure they know your decision so there'll be no question later.
Hey, buddy. She said yeah. Oh, hey, buddy. Me too.
What?
Share your life. Share your decision. Call 1-800-355-SHARE for a free brochure. 1-800-355-SHARE. A message from the Advertising Council and the Coalition on Donation.
The United States could very well soon find itself in the midst of talks with North Korea. Secretary of State Colin Powell today says there is a, quote, distinct possibility. China, North Korea, the United States, as well as perhaps a number of several other nations may take part in another round of multilateral talks later this year. The topic, of course, will be Pyongyang's nuclear ambitions. The last time the United States, China, and North Korea all met was back in April. Since that Beijing conference, Washington has been pushing for more talks that would include both South Korea and Japan.
Mom, Dad,
someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it? You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day.
Don't like the sound of that?
Tuck, you got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them, who, what, where, when? Questions. They're the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 for more information. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Anti-globalization protests continue today in Montreal, Canada, where trade ministers from some of the World Trade Organization member nations are discussing how to reduce trade barriers around the globe. Alistair Wanklin tells us the protesters haven't been very successful in disrupting the talks.
The protests continue, but so does the meeting between trade ministers. Spokeswoman for the protesters, Tamara Herman, said Canadian police had crippled the demonstrations.
The sheer numbers that were arrested yesterday, that has a big impact on us. We also, our resources are a bit more drained.
Some of those arrested were said by police to have been carrying makeshift petrol bombs. The Canadian government said violence discredits protests. Meanwhile, as this informal round of talks draws to a close, anti-globalization protesters say they'll regroup at the coming full WTO meeting in Mexico. Alistair Wanklin reporting.
And a two-year-old Las Vegas girl who was left in a hot car earlier this week has died. A local television saying she died earlier this morning. I'm Corey Morris. This is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Ancient peddlers invented it. Avon ladies made it big. And the high-tech Japanese still do it. If you think door-to-door is passé, when I come back, I'll tell you the latest. In today's world of discord and disappointment, one thing's for sure. Car cover owners are so satisfied, they buy their car covers all over again. Think car covers are a hassle? No. Research shows owners find covers easy to put on and take off. Are all covers the same? No. The standard in car cover fabric is Block It by Kimberly Clark. Don't let sun and dust damage your car. Kimberly Clark's Block It fabric's got you covered. That's Block It by Kimberly Clark. Japan has a reputation for tradition. Even buying cars is done the old-fashioned way, by door-to-door salesmen. But motivated by the recession and consumer demand, dealers are reconstructing their strategy. Nissan plans to open the door to Japan's first large-scale auto mall. And Honda's added a window to the World Wide Web with the introduction of internet-based kiosk. Another tradition breaker? Japan is buying record numbers of American-made parts, opening another door of opportunity. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of an earlier program, so don't call today, and thanks for listening.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live from coast to coast on ground based, what they call terrestrial radio stations, broadcasting on channel 145 of the Sirius Radio Satellite System. For your car, and now this month, I believe they came out with a home receiver, and also broadcasting live on the internet from radiopower.org and iamericaradio.com with archives at whiterosesociety.org. We've been talking about corporate personhood in the last hour, and we have a few calls still on the line about this. Jerry in Bellevue, Washington had a some thoughts on the issue. Jerry, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Thanks for calling 1-800-TALK-YES.
Oh, good morning. Well, I just wanted to comment. Your guest seems to think that a corporation is nothing more and nothing less than the aggregate of its shareholders. And I would state that that's not quite true, and the easiest example to show that is the concept of limited liability of the shareholders. And that is, if a bunch of my friends and I go down and toss garbage in the lake, we're all going to wind up in the pokey. If, however, we form a corporation and an employee of that corporation goes down and throws garbage in the lake, the employee probably winds up in the pokey, the corporation probably gets fined, but the shareholders have... You know, if assuming that they're not directors, don't have any liability in that. And that is, in fact, why a corporation does not inherit its rights from the shareholders.
Right. And oddly, up until the 1870s in the United States, most states construed shareholder responsibilities in such a way that if you were a shareholder, you could have gone to the pokey.
Yeah.
If your corporation did that, and this was before there was corporate personhood, it was more of the kind of libertarian perspective on it. Although corporations had very specific limitations, there was a whole series of them. And let's see here: corporations were explicitly chartered for the purpose of serving the public interest. Profit for shareholders was a means to that end. A charter was granted for a limited time, typically 30 or 40 years. Corporations could engage only in the activities necessary to fulfill their chartered purpose. They could be terminated if they exceeded their authority or caused public harm. The owners and managers were responsible for criminal actions committed on the job. Corporations could not make any political contributions whatsoever nor spend money to influence legislation. And a corporation could not purchase or own stock in other corporations nor own other property or any property other than that which was necessary to fulfill its chartered purpose. So things are very different today than they used to be. Corporations have acquired all these rights and powers and increasingly more immunities as well.
Yeah.
So I take it that's your point, too.
I agree. They are not natural persons.
There you go. Yeah, they are artificial persons. Jerry, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Good comment. And this is one of the big issues. Thursday of this week, I believe it is, the Supreme Court is expected to rule on the Caskey versus Nike case. So when that Caskey versus Nike case comes down, it's going to be real interesting to see what happens. Steve in Coverdale, Illinois, has called 1-800-TALK-YES. Thank you for calling, Steve. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello. Good day. Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I got a book here by Chuck Collins called Economic Apartheid in America, and it's on page 101. It's got a chart. It's titled Percentage of Federal Tax Collections from Individuals and Corporations. And here in the decade of the 90s, it shows that corporations contribute 15%, whereas individuals contribute 73%. So I didn't really think the corporations were being overtaxed on that point. But then Mr. Collins, in this book here, he also talks about, the rights coming from the shareholders and stuff like this. But, the shareholders, they have problems with the running of the corporation with what they call stockholder initiatives. It's difficult for, the shareholders, it's hard for them to get together and say, hey, I'm a shareholder, you're a shareholder, let's get together and force this corporation to do what we want it to do. And then also to the corporate governance boards, they're really limited there. And he also makes a suggestion that these corporate governance boards, they should be opened up to a larger community of people, to where the employees could have a seat on there, the unions could have a seat on there, and then community groups. Like if you live downriver from this thing, you could have your people in there on there too. And I just thought that maybe it's the idea that we could have reforms on these corporate governance boards. And also, just another point on Ayn Rand. My wife read Ayn Rand, and she was telling me that in a lot of those books, it ends with the story of a woman getting raped, and she enjoys it. I don't know. It was like Ayn Rand. I'm skeptical. I don't know.
Yeah,
but that's basically what I would say.
That's not my recollection. I read Atlas Shrugged years and years ago, and I don't recall that. But Ayn Rand was an interesting thinker. I think that she missed some points. She also brought a lot to the table. But I would say that our guest's point on the tax thing would have been that that the corporations are not actually paying taxes, that it's you and I paying taxes by virtue of our buying services from the corporation, and so the corporation just passes those taxes along. What contradicts that is that a corporation is using those things for which we pay taxes. That is to say, a corporation owns property. A corporation uses the police services. A corporation uses the fire department. A corporation is using the infrastructure of the roads. It's not the shareholders that are using that. Well, you could say they are by proxy through the corporation, but it is the corporation that is using that. And in exchange for those things that we all agree as members of a civic society we are going to pay for, we are going to collectively charge ourselves for, the corporation pays taxes. And to say that a corporation doesn't pay taxes is, in my opinion, nonsense, although I know that that's the argument du jour from the corporate side, from those folks who think the corporation shouldn't pay taxes. Steve, thank you very much for your comments. I appreciate the call. And I think that that has flushed our lines. If you've got anything you want to talk about here in this hour, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. I was reading an article about Howard Dean's announcement, and his there was a forum that Jesse Jackson hosted. And I got one of these epiphanies. It's been a while, and it was neat. It was like, whoa, yeah, wow. And here it was. They asked Howard Dean, how are we going to fund Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and all this stuff? It's funded right now, not out of the income tax, but out of the payroll tax. In fact, the payroll tax is called that. Some people refer to it as the Social Security tax, and the payroll tax, nobody is suggesting we should cut, because the payroll tax stops at $87,000 a year. In other words, if you make $100,000 a year, you pay a payroll tax of 15.5% or whatever it is on that first $87,000. And after that, you don't pay any more tax. You don't pay any more payroll tax. If you make $1 million a year, you only pay a payroll tax on the first $87,000, and then you don't pay any tax beyond that on the payroll tax. And it just struck me, I mean, what a common sense thing that Dean is talking he says, let's just lift it to $80,000 a year. Well, why not take it right up to the top? I mean, it's if we're paying tax, you want a flat rate tax? There it is, right there. Steve Forbes should love it. Everybody pays that 15% or whatever it is, and you would have more than enough money to fund Social Security and Medicare and right on down. It would just, think of the mind-boggling amount of cash it would generate if the wealthy, as well as middle-class working people, had to pay a payroll tax. Or even, as well as poor working people. You make $6,000 a year, you pay a payroll tax. You may not pay an income tax, but you're paying payroll tax. But if you make $1 million a year, you didn't pay an income tax on that $1 million a year. You only paid an payroll tax, or you only paid the payroll tax on the first $87,000. So, boy, some strange stuff going on with the taxes and things that can be done. The news from the Democrats, you'll notice from time to time we bring you the talking points of the various of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. And this is the Democratic news. President Bush and the Republicans are at it again, they say. They commit the worst outrages against the American people, hiding behind patriotism, cutting backroom deals, rejecting compromises while counting on you not to pay attention to what they're doing. Just look at two recent examples. These are actually pretty good examples, they say. To restore $1 billion in critical military housing funds, Democrats proposed a tiny cut to the tax breaks Republicans gave to millionaires. Now, this is the housing, the quality of the housing for our GIs. Republicans refused. They kept the $1 billion in cuts to housing for our men and women in uniform and their families so that those earning more than $1 million or more per year could get $88,326 in tax breaks instead of $83,546. When it comes to choosing between the military and the millionaires, Republicans choose millionaires every time. And so it appears. And then this is the other one, this Westar Energy thing. This is as close to a bribery scandal as I've seen in a long time. When executives at the Midwestern energy company Westar wanted a special interest provision inserted into an energy bill, they knew just what they had to do. They drafted a detailed plan laying out campaign contributions from specific executives to specific GOP candidates to get what they called, quote, a seat at the table, end quote. And in the main of those candidates, by the way, was Tom Delay. Delay anything, delay all this stuff, delay. Delay, delay, Tom Delay, the former pesticide applicator. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma is on the line. Glenn, welcome to the Tom Hartman radio program.
Hi, Tom. Hey, Tom. My comment was about corporate malfeasance and the fact that in the majority of cases, from what I've read, it seems that the fines and penalties they pay compared to the amount of unfair profits or profiteering that they make are so minuscule percentage-wise that it really doesn't act as a deterrent to keep them from doing it in the future. I really don't think most of them. I really don't think most of them do go bankrupt because of that. I think it's almost like the Pinto story where it was more cost beneficial to avoid the $11 a car.
Yeah, you've got one or two. I mean, even Arthur Andersen, I mean, they went bankrupt and they theoretically vanished, but they have reinvented themselves. They are back. So, yes, good point. I just heard a cue in my ear, but I didn't hear what it said. I'm sorry. We're going to continue here. Okay. Glenn, thank you for your comment. I appreciate your calling. 1-800-TALK-YES, Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Thanks for that. Stay with the Tom Hartman radio program. We'll return in just a few moments.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was as straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risk.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HD TV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Ooh, yeah. All right, we're jamming. I want to jam it with you.
Yeah, we're jamming here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. These men and women are still the best of America, said George W. Bush on 11-11-02. They are prepared for every mission we give them, and they are worthy of the standards set for them by America's veterans. Our veterans from every era, the finest of citizens, we owe them the life we know today. They command the respect of the American people, and they have our everlasting gratitude, end quote. Jerry in North Carolina has called 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, Jerry. Jerry, you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I sure can. What's up? Jerry, you're breaking up. I think maybe you're on a cell phone there, and it's not a particularly good connection. Why don't you try calling us back in a few minutes after you've moved into another cell area or however you're going with that. This president is essentially using Argentina as his fiscal model, Howard Dean said. Howard Dean announced his candidacy for the presidency, in Burlington, Vermont, here in the People's Republic of Vermont. He said, and I quote, "People are not going to invest in a country whose currency is dropping as rapidly as ours is relative to the euro, and they're not going to invest in a country that can't manage its affairs." The big concern about deflation right now, and you know what's going to happen, the currency of the United States crashing. I got a fascinating email from Shelby at radiopower.org that I want to share with you after this break, just about this topic and what happened in Germany back before the 1930s and how that in some ways led to that. But Howard Dean goes on to say, this president is running the country the same way Enron was run. The president's father called it voodoo economics, and I think he was right, Dean said. He said, and I quote, until the United States changes its oil policy, which we have no hope of under this president, we're not going to see peace in the Middle East because the money that goes to funding terror is our oil money funneled through the Saudis and others. Get out and vote today with your, if you got a ballot from MoveOn.org. We'll see who's going to be their choice for the Democratic nomination. Stay with the Tom Hartman Program. We'll return in just a few moments.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Our scientists have studied and found that our listeners have a lot of stress from the lack of being able to get their questions and comments off of their minds, which can cause nausea, vomiting, and eventually will make you strip down, sit in a corner, and drool while counting pretty yellow and pink elephants flying around.
Okay.
So now, IE America Radio Network is proud to present the IE Hotline. Call and give your comments.
I just wanted to call and let you know your internet station totally rocks off the chart.
Your suggestions.
I think Doug Stephan should be on all day, 24/7. Yeah.
Your questions.
Got a question about Bush. How the hell do you put food on your family? What is that?
Crop growth and biologic growth are by liquidity, will, and volitional control.
Or whatever the heck that just was. So call 1-800-397-8255 and leave a message for any one of our on-air talents. 1-800-397-8255. Operators are standing by. Just kidding. You have to leave a message.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Sunday. Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're going to kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Tanya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boy, come on!
Hello, this is Andy Dave Rush inviting you to join the fun on Home Improvement USA. Great guests and experts offer home improvement advice and keep us updated on new products and technologies. On Home Improvement USA, we give away terrific prizes to all our callers. Join me, Handy Dave, along with Ken Walchek on location at Clark Devon Hardware in Chicago and engineer and handyman Jay Brentlinger for Home Improvement USA. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 Pacific on Saturday. Don't miss it.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Hamilton.
And I'm Laura Miller. It's not a layoff, but 2,700 workers at an IBM chip manufacturing plant in South Burlington, Vermont, are taking an 18% wage cut as the company reduces everyone's working hours. IBM came under fire last week when audio tapes surfaced of its human resources executives discussing the need for a mass transfer of jobs overseas, but the company says this cutback in Vermont is no precursor to any sort of move. Effective August 2nd, workers at the plant will go from working 42 hours to 36 hours per week.
The public has spoken on the issue of whether the Labor Department should eliminate the right to time and a half pay for millions of American workers, and the answer is clear. A vast majority oppose the rollback. The public comment period on the proposal officially ended June 30th, but cards and letters keep pouring in, more than 80,000 so far. The Economic Policy Institute says the plan would rob a net 8 million Americans of overtime wages.
If these regulations go through, we will lose our time and a half overtime, and we stand to lose thousands of dollars in overtime pay.
John Garrity is an electronics technician with the federal government.
These changes are changes that are going to benefit corporate America. There are no benefits to the American working man or woman that goes to work every day.
Earlier this month, a House measure that would have blocked any changes to overtime rules failed by 3 votes after a handful of Democrats crossed party lines to support the president. 7 other Democrats failed to show for the vote, including presidential hopeful Richard Gephardt. Ironically, Gephardt was in Iowa that day receiving the endorsement of the International Association of Machinists.
The 6-year contract between Caterpillar and the United Auto Workers expires in April.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes, an airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn world serve its own needs. Dummy serve your own needs. Beat it up.
In our chat room, we've got some conversation going on there about the presidential primaries. If you want to get to the chat room, go to TomHartman.com, click on the radio show link, click on the chat room link, and that'll take you to the International Trade Forum on CompuServe. Push the chat button. We're using that room in that forum because the software is really neat. It works really well. You can have good moderated discussions there. And some interesting discussions. One person says, I read Kucinich's stuff. Although he wants to create another cabinet position. Somebody else says, I like Bob Graham. Another one says, hand me another beer. I can't type straight. Another says, you're right. The left has to reinvent the rhetoric. And here's where I'd like to see a Dean Graham ticket. I'd like to see a Kerry Graham ticket. But here's a I think this is a really important point. Anybody who wants my vote, this writer says in our chat room, anybody who wants my vote has to show that they are willing to attack AWOL. That's George W. Bush, who went AWOL during the Vietnam War for 18 months, and make issues out of all the crimes this administration has committed. Otherwise, they'll just get eaten alive. And Kerry, and then somebody else says, Kerry doesn't have that look. Kucinich isn't shy about attacking, but anyhow, it's an interesting discussion. If you want to comment on these things, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Now, this is the this thing that Shelby shared with me a few days ago. And Shelby noted that the source of this was William L. Schur's Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. I don't know if this is verbatim or if it's paraphrased, if Shelby put this together or whether these are the actual words of Schur. So I'll be sure to cite Schur here in the event that this is fair use usage. The mark had begun to slide in 1921, the mark being the currency of Germany. Our currency is called the dollar. In Germany, it was called the mark. Still is. Well, actually, now it's called the euro. It began to slide in 1921 when it dropped to 75 to the dollar. That is, to buy $1, you had to spend 75 marks, or an individual mark was worth a little more than a penny, about a penny and, what, a quarter would it be? I don't do reverse math that fast. The next year, it fell to 400 to the dollar, which means that it dropped its value more than fourfold. And by the beginning of 1923, it took 7,000 German marks to buy $1. In the fall of 1922, the Germans asked the Allies to grant a moratorium on the reparation payments, and the French bluntly refused. When Germany defaulted, the French ordered troops in to occupy the Ruhr, Germany's industrial heartland, which supplied four-fifths of its coal and steel production. This paralyzing blow to the German economy united the people as they had not been united since 1914. The workers of the Ruhr declared a general strike, and on it went. Now, here's the situation. Germany lost World War I. They had to pay reparation to the nations that they had attacked and harmed in that war. And by deflating the value of their currency, by decreasing the value of the mark, they were able to pay back these debts, which were in fixed amounts, with marks that were relatively easier to get.
So they had a million mark debt to France, and a million marks, say, at 1920 equaled $1 million. By 1923, a million marks equaled maybe $50,000. So it was easier to pay back their debts by creating this deflation. They were in this huge debt. In 1923, the mark fell to 18,000 to the dollar, and by July of 1923, it was at 160,000 marks to buy $1. Now, this is, it totally went out of control. It's totally spun out of control. And the punchline to all this, which I'm working up to, is how did this happen? What brought this about? By August, it took a million marks to buy $1. And by November of 1923, when Hitler thought his hour had struck, it took 4 billion German marks to buy a single dollar. This all took less than 1 year. It wiped out the purchasing power of wages. People would go home during their coffee breaks and during their lunch breaks to buy things because by the end of the day, the money would be worth so much less. The life savings of the middle class were wiped out. This inflation, and this is not deflation, this is inflation. This is where the currency becomes worth less, so it takes more and more of it to buy something. This inflation could have been halted by merely balancing the German budget, a difficult but not impossible feat. Adequate taxation could have achieved this, but the Republic did not dare to tax adequately. After all, the cost of World War I, which was 164 billion marks, had not met even had been met in part by taxation, but 93 billion of it by loans, 29 billion by treasury bills, and the rest by increasing the production of paper money. Instead of drastically raising the taxes on those who could pay, the Republic in 1921, and this is what set this thing off, actually reduced taxes. The government deliberately let the mark tumble in order to free the country of its huge debts. Now, the United States, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, before Ronald Reagan came into office, the United States was the largest creditor in the world. More countries, more people owed us money than we owed. People used our currency. It was the currency of much of the world. It still is to a large extent, although the euro is taking it fast. And the main thing that's holding up the dollar right now is the fact that oil is denominated in dollars for international trade. If that were to change to euros, which is what Saddam had done with Iraqi oil last year, if that were to spread across OPEC or spread around the world, it would be a major disaster for the dollar. The dollar could go the same way as the German mark. According to Scherer, the government deliberately let the mark tumble in order to free the country of its huge debt. So if you owed 164 billion marks and you make a billion marks worth a dollar, you can pay off the entire national debt with $164, which is essentially what the Germans were doing. This enabled German heavy industry to wipe out its debt by refunding its obligation in now worthless marks. So all the corporations that held debt, that had sold bonds, this is how corporations go into debt, is they sell bonds. You can buy corporate bonds. It's called commercial paper. You can buy them, you know, from any stockbroker. All these corporations that were in debt, they were able to pay off their bonds, buy back their debt for nothing. It wiped out Germany's debt and left the country financially unencumbered. The reason that this is important is that some of the trends, not all of them, but some of the trends that led to this in Germany are happening right now. To quote, I think I'm quoting Scherer here, spend heavily on militarism, run up the national debt, cut taxes, devalue the currency. When the nation goes bankrupt, a two-class system is born. From there, it's simple to convert the nation into a fascist dictatorship, as Hitler later demonstrated. Actually, I think Shelby wrote that. Shelby of RadioPower.org. This is, I mean, let us hope this is not the future that we're seeing. The UN, this is from the Wall Street Journal a couple of days ago. The U.S. and Europe are battling over an ambitious global treaty. We're going through here the best of the rest of the news. Just want to share with you some of the stuff that's happening that you might not have noticed, that certainly is not being reported widely on the major media. Although this article by Bob Davis, UN reins in Europe's ambition on UN treaty to ban corruption, was in the Wall Street Journal. It's interesting what you find in the journal, because it's kind of like the power brokers talking to themselves, and they're sometimes surprisingly candid. And I quote, the U.S. and Europe are battling over an ambitious global treaty to ban corruption, largely because Europe wants the pact to cover businesses, and the U.S. wants it restricted to governments. In other words, our government is saying, we don't want to sign any, we don't want those thinking treaties if they require businesses to avoid corrupt business practices. And Europe and the rest of the world, and of course the United States under the Clinton administration, were all working very hard to get this treaty passed. Quoting the Wall Street Journal again, many European officials remain dubious about the U.S. commitment to multilateral accords, especially after the Bush administration rejected international pacts on global warming in a war crimes court. They go on to say the U.S. position represents a striking turnaround from several years ago when the Clinton administration pressed a reluctant Europe to crack down on bribes. But now we're turning back from that. Among the provisions being debated, the Wall Street Journal says, are prohibitions on bribery, favoritism, false documents, and other corrupt practices among businesses as well as government agencies, and requirements that political parties disclose their sources of financing. The U.S. wants the convention to be limited to subjects such as government corruption and recovery of stolen assets by the likes of Saddam Hussein. We are going to veto this treaty, because it requires corporations to act in a non-corrupt fashion. The U.S. especially objects. This is from the Wall Street Journal. The U.S. especially objects to European plans to include business corruption in the pact. European negotiators say non-state-owned companies sometimes make illicit payments among themselves, and that those corrupt business practices should be barred. The pact would bar bribes paid from one business to another and limit the lobbying activities of former government officials, among other things. And it goes on. It's amazing. We have Ted Nadeau is a stringer with Newsweek, as I recall, and he's on the line reporting from a conference out in California. Tom, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Tom, tell us about the conference that you're at.
Well, it's a meeting. It's actually called a ministerial conference and expo on agriculture, science, and technology. It's at the Sacramento Convention Center.
Mm-hmm.
It's going for 3 days, starting yesterday. Today is the second day for the conference. It's the third day of demonstrations opposing some of the things that are being discussed at the conference. And there are approximately 520 delegates at the conference from 100 countries around the world, primarily third world and developing nations. A large contingent of delegates.
Tom, I need you to talk just a little bit louder if you can.
Oh, sorry. Delegations from Europe didn't show up, so the attendance is down quite a bit. And outside the convention are people from about 130 different organizations that, for one reason or other, or for one other issue, oppose some of the issues being debated inside.
They're protesting.
Yes.
What types of protests are going on?
Well, they started on Sunday with some marches and protests in which about 22 people were arrested. These were in the area around the convention center. Yesterday they had a rally in front of the state capitol drawing about 1,500 people, a lot of street theater costumes, marching, music, that sort of thing. Only about eight were arrested yesterday. They're having about, so far as of today, there's about 36 have been arrested. There's another march and vigil that's forming up now that will march from the convention center down to the arraignment courts at the jailhouse courtrooms in a little further downtown at 6th Street. Where they're going to protest the felony arraignment of one woman arrested on on Sunday, or yesterday.
Arrested for what?
I don't know the exact charge, but it was had to do. She's apparently sitting down and resisting or failing to move along. I have not talked with a lawyer that knows specifically the charge. All the people involved are saying that this is the one felony.
Wow. So we're speaking with Tom Nadeau. Tom, you're there for Newsweek, is that right?
Well, I'm a freelancer, and I sometimes string for organizations such as Newsweek, and I have done it for Reuters, and I'm here specifically to get information for Newsweek. I'm not writing.
You've gone faint again. Yeah, you need to turn your volume back up again.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had to leave the area for a payphone, so... Anyway, I'm here as a picking up information for Newsweek on this conference. Yes.
So Tom, it sounds to me like this is basically a conference of the world food industry and government hand in hand bunch. I don't know quite how to.
Well, the primary issue is this is all about biotechnology, genetically modified foods, genetically altered foods, and what that means in terms of. Safe foods, contamination of different crops, and then particularly corporate control of the seeds that are devised to provide these genetically modified crops. And so the issues are biotechnology, is it safe, and what impact will it have on the cultures and economies of the third world, whether or not farmers will be able to the sustainable farmers working on their own, or will they be required to purchase seeds every year from corporations that hold patents to the seeds that...
And presumably that's what the protesters are protesting about, is this whole Frankenfood.
Exactly. It's not just the safety issue, it's the control issue. They're referring to it as food democracy.
Uh-huh.
Will the farmers in the different nations be able to control their own futures by maintaining control of the crops, or will they become essentially tenant farmers for corporations, or buying each year their seeds and getting permission
right.
to...
As is already happening all over the world, it seems.
Well, one of the issues they're talking about is Percy Schmeiser, who's a farmer in Saskatchewan in Canada, who patented canola plant made its way onto his property, and
right. There's the pollen.
Monsanto has sued for patent protection, intellectual property rights over it, and essentially stopped them from growing anything. He's one of the highlighted people here.
Okay, great. Tom Nadeau. Tom, is there a website where people can find your work?
Sure, but it's not on this issue. It's on general things. But
We just have about 5 seconds here.
TomNadeau.com.
N-A-D-E-A-U, right?
Right.
Okay, great. Tom, thank you very much for calling with that report from the conference.
Bye.
Out there in California. We'll look forward on the news. Here in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
A real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Mom, Dad,
someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it?
You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day.
Don't like the sound of that?
So, you got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them, who, what, where, when. Questions. They're the anti-drug.
Call 1-800-729-6686 for more information. Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
When the gas light comes on in your car, do you tap it to try to turn it off?
When you get a flat tire, do you drive around hoping it will reinflate? No. But right now, you could be ignoring a battery problem, which is why there's DieHard Express, only at Sears Auto Center. DieHard Express is more than a battery service. It's a complete checkup for your car's electrical system. Our experts will look for common problems, and if it's the battery, we'll install a new DieHard, America's most preferred battery.
DieHard Express. Sears. Good life, great price. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
Show. We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man for people who had more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You don't know what's going on. You've been away for far too long. You can't come back.
Welcome back. Uncommon Sense from the radical middle. Bill King in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, posts to our message board at TomHartman.com. Surprise, 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 as Gomer Pyle would have exclaimed in the Wall Street Journal today, quote, the Bush administration is considering a controversial plan to pay for Iraq's reconstruction by mortgaging its future oil revenue, end quote. Bill says, if you happen to see this post, Tom, you may recall I emailed you in March that this exact scenario would take place, also that the war cost would be extracted as well. What slays me is that this plan is being treated as if someone just thought of it recently. And then Barbara Roser of Ohio
says, you didn't really think they were going to raise taxes on corporations to pay for this war, did you, Bill? Which led to an interesting conversation there. We have both the live chat room where we've got some folks. In fact, there's somebody just posted a joke. What's the difference between a Canadian backpacker and an American backpacker in Europe? The answer, the Canadian is the one with only one Canadian flag on his or her backpack. Listening to you and your guest on healthcare, this is from last week, the issue of today, very interesting to hear an example of pure idealism expressed, in this case, laissez-faire capitalism, by a true believer. Good job, Tom, in trying to focus him on the subject, healthcare in the U.S. Thought you did a good job of bringing out the exorbitant dollars the managed care CEOs take out of the system, eliciting the guest response that, quote, capitalism will solve that problem, end quote, which seems to be the rightest silly last response whenever they have nothing else to offer. Oh, the right wing's silly response. Love your guest who brought out another point that the private company can say, I won't sell you that. Thanks, keep it up. This is from Hawaii, from Jeannie in Hawaii. Jeannie, thank you for posting and for participating in our program. Richard Leonard sends an email. He says, the media is an advertising vehicle for transnational corporations. That in itself makes them right wing because the market is inherently amoral and unconcerned with issues of human dignity, worker rights, and environmental protection. How can a media that markets Hummers and Ford excursions as status symbols, regardless of their impact on the environment, be labeled liberal? Excellent question, Richard. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Tune back in tomorrow. Same time, same place. This has been Tom Hartman. Thanks for joining us. See you tomorrow.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boy, come on!